It's time for Windows Weekly. Paul Thurrott's here, Mary Jo Foley, and we're joined by .NET Rocks' Richard Campbell. We'll be talking about the newest versions of Windows, a little bit about Microsoft's Chromium strategy, and yeah, with Richard, you got to talk about whiskey. It's all coming up next on Windows Weekly.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
This is Windows Weekly with Paul Thurrott and Mary Jo Foley. Episode 608, recorded Wednesday, February 13th, 2019. The Admiral Akbar Thesis. Windows Weekly is brought to you by ExpressVPN. Protect your online activity today. For an extra 3 months free with a 1-year package, go to expressvpn.com/windows. And by Capterra. Find the right software for your business with over 750,000 reviews of products from real software users. Check out Capterra's free website to find the right tools to make 2019 the year for your business at capterra.com/windows. And by Atlassian. Atlassian software powers the full spectrum of collaboration between IT teams and the rest of your organization. Visit atlassian.com/IT to see what IT can be by giving their products a try for free. It's time for Windows Weekly, the show where we cover the latest news from Microsoft. We have a big show with some special featured guest coming up in just a little bit. But first, let me introduce the woman of the hour, Mary Jo Foley of allaboutmicrosoft.com.
Just the hour, Leo.
Just the hour.
Well, two
not
hours,
the second hour.
Three, 4 hours.
Actually, we're already 42 minutes into that hour.
I know,
so
sorry.
You've got about 17 minutes.
Your hour's dwindling. She's going to get her 18 minutes of fame.
Now, I'm going to talk really fast.
And Paul Thurrott of Thurrott.com and leanpub.com, two of the best in the business, and also two of my best friends, because I'm a lonely, sad person. And all my friends are out there on Skype. No, I always look forward to doing this show because, you know, you guys are fun.
Not like those other jerks.
I don't like them very much. I always say I have to pay to have friends, but it's worth it. So it's a rainy day, flooding here in Northern California. But I'm sure that's
a snowy day here. It's,
yeah, meaningless it's to you in the Northeast where blizzards are the...
Well, you heard about Seattle, didn't you?
Yeah, the snow apocalypse. Lumaresca.
Yeah, I mean, unbelievable. The pictures, the most snow in 70 years.
But it was what, 5 inches, 6 inches? What
no,
was it?
It's more. It's oh, it like more. A foot.
Oh, all right.
Yeah, wow, there, that's a lot.
A foot. Wow.
No, Paul's but had out that there, all winter. That's a lot.
I've had
that's
six feet of snow on the ground at my house, but, you know, whatever.
A foot, you know. Yeah.
They don't have plows. They have like two plows.
They don't know what to do. Lou was saying that he just stayed home from work. It was a snow day.
Yeah.
See, I think that sounds great.
Paul, if you had to go to work, where would you go?
Exactly.
Oh, if I had to go to work, I'd kill myself. I am so ruined for going to work. You could, I've been working at home for 20 years. I go to work?
Go to work.
Have you ever commuted? Have you seen
these
people?
That means going across the hall.
They must hate each other. I would just yell at people all
they
the time.
They hate themselves. That's why they subject themselves to that. Well, not all of us are fortunate enough to be able to work in our jammies.
I'm sort of wearing pants. I don't understand.
Sort of is the operative phrase. We're going to get a guest in here in just a little bit. Can I say who, or should we surprise everybody?
You could, if you would like to.
Richard Campbell's going to join us of .NET Rocks. He's been on the
Richard
show.
Campbell ruined
times.
My life. We'll talk about that later.
He ruined my life by introducing me to Angel Share.
Yeah,
no. And many he introduced others. Me to Abalora Bunda, which is that incredible scotch.
Yeah, he's a bad, bad man. But
he is. He's terrible.
But he's here to talk about a good thing.
He is.
That's coming up. But first, let's talk Windows 10. We've been talking. It's funny, and maybe your ears have been burning because we've been mentioning you a lot on the other shows because Apple has kind of come under the same kind of. Opprobrium that Microsoft came under for not listening to bug reports. Of course, this is mm-hmm. the the FaceTime bug.
Yeah, but Microsoft did this 20 years ago. You know, I mean, I get it. It's the same problem. But Microsoft solved this problem in 2002, I think it was, Trustworthy Computing Initiative.
Did they? Did they? Because after all, they were told about the show-stopping data deleting bug in 1809, months before it
Okay, but that's for sure. There are there are different kinds of problems. But I mean, as far as like having an endemic security issue, you know, they develop their products with security as one of the checkboxes. Like it has to meet a certain, you know, criteria, and that's something they did establish many years ago.
All right. So
I mean, they're always, of course, they're going to still have problems. There's still 0 days. There's still and of course the communication issues they have with insiders are
that's kind of what I was referring to, is the notion that it's hard when you have many, many people using your product. It's hard to know which bug reports are just cranky people.
Apple doesn't even have a way to put in a bug report. You know, the problem with Apple is that they don't listen to their customers at all. Microsoft at least pretends to.
I'm not sure which is worse.
I mean, I think, as I understand it, one of the issues with the FaceTime bug that you're referring to is that the kid, I guess a teenager.
14-year-old,
didn't know how to contact Apple effectively. His parents couldn't figure it out either.
His mom tweeted Apple. That didn't work. She then went to her local Fox News affiliate. Maybe not the best place. Eventually, after calling Apple, they said, well, you needed to file a bug radar. But of course, in order to do a bug radar filing, you have to be a registered developer. So
you just pay $99 and then you can get that thing right in there, and then maybe we'll listen to it.
Yeah. And clearly Apple realizes they made a mistake after 9to5 Mac published the bug a week later. And I think they've said that we're not going to let that happen again. We're going to pay closer attention. But I don't know. I likened that to the problems Windows had, Microsoft had with 1809. But maybe that, maybe that's
different. No, that's fair. That actually is fair. I mean, you know, I guess the opposite of it's like riding a bike is falling off a bike is always easy too. I mean, you know, Microsoft has systems in place, and I think what happens is you get complacent and you think that this is working. And they did have some good results, remember, with a couple of releases in a row. And I think that fed the things that happened with 1803 and 1809.
You know what, though? Do you remember them saying, or at least hinting early this year, they were going to be talking about some changes they were making to how they have bug... So nothing's happened.
Yeah, John Cable was going to have a series of posts explaining all the changes they were going to make to make sure that 1809... Well, they've had...
That's happened, but there's nothing in there about changes. There's just stuff about how great they're doing with finding bugs.
Oh, I can't wait for the day that one of us will talk to them and they'll say, you know, we spent 6 months investigating this and what we found is we're already doing a great job.
I think that's what they may say.
Yeah, I do too. I'm not. Yeah. That's.
Anyway. Yeah.
So I don't know. This next one's going to be great. Don't worry about it.
19H1.
H1, as we call it.
This is exciting. You're going to get a free game.
Not exactly. So in the latest Windows Insider preview build, I don't know, Mary Jo, if you even understood what they were talking about, but they're making some kind of what I take to mean underlying gaming infrastructure changes. And what they want to do is have people play games on a system where these changes have been made, so they can make sure that those changes have worked. They have never explained what those changes are.
No,
I don't think.
They're being secretive about it, right?
Yeah. So what they did
was
they opened
up. We want you to install a game and let us know how it goes. Okay.
Just play the game. All we want you to do is play the game.
Tell me it's not Candy Crush Saga.
Yeah.
It is not.
No, it's State of Decay, which is an excellent kind of zombie survival game. But it's only for a limited number of people. I think that initial allotment has been filled, right?
Oh,
and so what they said is that over time, they're going to open up to more and more people. The Xbox Wireblog did a post about this, I think, yesterday. I don't know why. They basically just said, response has been overwhelming. We're going to do more. Don't worry. But it's mysterious because what they want you to do is just play the game. I think what they want to do is gather the telemetry data that occurs via something. I mean, they've literally never explained what it is. You know, in the past, we've seen this kind of thing before. You might remember, Mary Jo, previous releases of Windows 10, where they would put the infrastructure in place in one release for a feature that would come in a future release. Mm-hmm. And there was one that was had to do with Windows Update, where you wouldn't see the advantages of this change when you updated to this version, but it was in that version. So once you updated to the next version, right? So I think it's something like that, but they're being a little cagey about what that might be.
Is the game on Azure? Are they?
No, well, it's you download it through the Microsoft Store. I suppose technically that probably is on Azure, I guess.
I guess he's asking, though, I bet, about streaming. Like, is this
the streaming? Yeah, what are they testing?
Yeah, no, so it's, no, it's not. You know, Microsoft has very limited game streaming capabilities, and I would say only on Xbox One right now. This is on Windows 10, and so it's a good guess that it has something to do with that. I don't actually know this for sure, but I don't believe you can. I'm not even sure if State of Decay is an Xbox Play Anywhere game, but let's say that it is. You know, on Xbox One, you could download some percentage of it and start playing it, right? And it would continue downloading in the background while you were doing that. It's not technically streaming. You're not playing a streaming title. On Windows 10, rather, I'm not sure. I'm honestly not sure. I don't want to say, but I don't believe that same system is there.
Wasn't there also a change in the SDK recently that made it easier for cross-platform gaming to occur? And maybe this has something to do with that.
Yeah, I'm not sure.
It could just be testing DirectX features, right? It could be testing.
I mean, wouldn't that be sad if it was just something as basic as that?
But we don't know.
I think you're right. Yeah. I think when your mind goes to X Cloud, I suspect it does have something. You know, we've put something in the platform. Why this particular game? I don't know.
You quote on your blog post, Donna Sakar, saying, "We're excited to bring technology tailor-made for gaming to Windows. Help us validate these systems' work as expected. Play State of Decay for free, limited time only." Mm-hmm. But this is what she says. "Tell us about any problems you encounter with installing and launching."
Yeah. That's all it says.
It might be, later in the show, there'll be a thing about a minor update to the Xbox system software. One of the things that's in there is a fast start update, which basically just means that some games have been engineered to start very quickly, which is that download while you play type thing I was talking about. Yeah. They've improved that slightly. They've added a few more games to that list. Maybe this is the beginning of that on Windows, which would be maybe the first step toward this xCloud thing, where eventually we are going to literally be streaming games.
And, I think Donna's familiar with the Heisenberg uncertainty principle and understands that if you tell people what you're looking for, that will color the results you get. So
that's true.
She's just telling them what to do and let us know what happens.
And so we know that they want us to test it. Right. We don't know what they want us to test, other than download the game, install it,
launch.
Play it, and tell us if you have any problems. It would be interesting if you playing the game meant nothing to them, right? That the thing they're really looking for is how this thing deploys to your PC, and maybe that's the difference. Maybe it is this fast start / beginning of X Cloud thing, and that would make sense to me.
Yeah. Yeah. And to be clear, this is not a feature of the next version of Windows. This is just for insiders. And in fact, it's over now, probably.
No, they're going to keep doing it. It's going to be an ongoing thing. I think it's
but
I think
it's
fair to say
in Windows 19H1 when it comes out, is it?
Maybe.
Well, it could be. It could be. The thing is, it's just it's not a feature you can point to.
Yeah.
You know, there may be a feature in Windows 10, 19H1, that is, if you get any one of these five games, there'll be a fast start functionality enabled so that it will work like it does on Xbox. So that's how they would describe that. And then maybe over the course of the summer before the next release, they would add a couple more titles to the list. And then maybe in the next release of Windows, they would improve it, the actual feature. Mm-hmm. But all we can do is guess. I mean, you read how vague it is. It's not really clear what the functionality is exactly, other than that something underneath has changed. We're going to see if it works. We're not going to tell you what it is. Yep. So I don't know.
And that was like the only new feature in that test build, right? Everything else was fixes except that.
Yep. And by the way, a notable number of fixes, which makes sense. You know, Bug Bash was recently, and of course they're winding this thing down. So I thought that was kind of interesting. But the game thing, you kind of read through it two or three times. You're like,
Yeah.
Is it just
what do
not
you want us to do?
Yeah.
What else is there?
Also, where is the slow ring build?
Right.
That was supposed to happen also, like, right after the bug bash. And that hasn't shown up either, right?
They've had a problem with slow ring, though, really. You know,
yeah, they have.
Past year or two. It used to be a pretty regular thing. Then it wasn't a thing at all, you know, for 9 months or whatever that time frame was. And then they have shipped a couple with this release, but it hasn't been regular like it was in the beginning for sure.
So what is new in this new build?
Yeah, so I did, well, not in this new build, but in this version. So in other words, as this version, the development of it is winding down, you know, last week, kind of inspired by the conversation we had last week, because we had the Chris Hoffman list, which was comprehensive. And Microsoft maintains its own list at doc.microsoft.com of all of the new features that are coming as well. And as you would expect, comprehensive. I kind of ran through all those and cherry-picked the things that I thought were the big deals. And we did cover some of them last week for sure. But I just wanted to make sure. I made a list of 10 items. And I don't know that we talked about all of these things. We talked about Cortana and Search being separated, for example. I remember that, the pause update thing for 7 days, which I thought was amazing. There's a couple other things that I think are really important to people in this release. So in Windows 10 today, you can uninstall 5 or 7 of the inbox apps, you know, the apps that come with the system. In 19H1, that list is being expanded dramatically, and it's going to include almost a dozen more apps that you can uninstall. So if you don't want to see that stuff in the start menu, you prefer that kind of uncluttered look, you never want those things to pop up by mistake, whatever it is, you can get rid of a bunch more of those apps. And I think that's a big deal, even though it's just kind of a small thing. A bunch of UX stuff, you know, the simplified start menu that's more fluent throughout. I think that stuff's cool. I think this thing is starting to mature from a look and feel perspective. Finally, it's only taken 5 years, but it's getting there. One feature that has actually been in Windows 10 for a little while now, and most people don't know it exists, it's not enabled by default, so that's one thing, is what used to be called the Cloud Clipboard. And what this is the ability to cut and paste across multiple PCs and in a limited fashion between your smartphone and your PC as well, which is really cool. You actually have to go into settings to enable it, for one thing. And then there's a special keyboard shortcut that you use. Instead of Control-V to paste, you do Win key plus V, and this dialog pops up with the last several items that are in the clipboard across your PCs. And so in this version, they're actually improving that so that that dialog you see is just nicer looking, and it better displays what you're going to paste. So it kind of has a new look and feel to it. So that's cool. It's just something I don't think most people really know about. And then the other one, then again, it's like one of those small things, but there's a feature called Screen Snip in Windows 10. It used to be called the snipping tool. And I always thought of it as kind of a superfluous function because it was like the 11th way you could do screenshots in Windows 10 or Windows. But the way this thing works now is it has a unique keyboard shortcut. So it's usually Win key plus Shift plus S. When you type that, a little toolbar comes up at the top and it lets you choose between the different types of paste or screenshots you can do. So it's window and full screen, obviously, but also rectangular or arbitrary shapes. And the nice thing about this now is that you can also map it to print screen. So if you just want this to become...
That's cool.
Yeah, it's...
I use the snipping tool all the time. What do you use for your books? Do you use that?
I use a variety of different things. I was using, I think it was called, I'm going to get this wrong, it's a third-party app in the store called, I think it's called ShareX. I've used a lot. I just used a built-in, you know, copy-paste stuff a lot. For the books, I have to get the mouse cursor into a lot of shots.
So you can't use
it. Sometimes I'll Photoshop it in just because it's a little easier. But honestly, going forward, I think I'm going to use this thing. The way this thing works now, and you're seeing this across a lot of Microsoft apps in Windows 10, they're starting to add these little toolbars to the top, you know, that are just a quick way to access the various functions of this thing. It's pretty nice. So it's kind of a good tip if you're using the snipping tool, or not the snipping tool, but the new version screen snip. I always forget the name of this thing. What's it called? Screen snip. Yeah. If you go into accessibility settings and settings, ease of access keyboard, you'll see a use print screen button to open snipping.
That's great. That makes me so happy.
Yeah, it's a neat little tip. So
because the just some the good stuff in there. Default print screen is okay, but it's not what I want to do.
Yeah, it's fine. Yeah, but it's like this is just. I think for most people, this is how it should work. I wouldn't be surprised if they just made this default in the future. It's it's a way more sophisticated than I pressed a button, what happened, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Cool.
Yeah. So I just want to highlight that because there's some Big Bang stuff in there, you know, Windows Sandbox and all that kind of stuff. But there's a bunch of little things that I think when you add them up, this turns into a pretty interesting release overall.
I know. When we talked about it last week, I was surprised because we were thinking, oh, it's just a bunch of incremental stuff. But then when we started going through the list, I'm like, no, there's actually a lot in there that's and useful.
It's not just a lot. It's good stuff, right? So in the past, we would have said something like this big new thing called Windows Mixed Reality. You know, that doesn't impact almost anybody.
No.
But these are features everyone, needs to know about and should, and then should use, right? Like the cloud clipboard stuff, the screen snip stuff. I mean, these are things that improve features that have been Windows for decades in meaningful ways, you know, not brand new stupid things. And I think that's pretty notable.
Nice. Very nice. Let's take a little tiny time out. We are getting ready for a visit. From
from Santa.
Santa. I want to say Santa or, I don't know, the great seer of the East. I don't know. It's just Richard Campbell, so I don't know what to say. But he's coming in a bit, and more news, too, and lots more to talk about. Before we do that, though, I want to talk a little bit about our sponsor, ExpressVPN. People who listen to our shows, I think, understand the value of a VPN. Many of you are already using a VPN. I want to recommend the number one VPN. Number one, according to TechRadar, voted by its users, the most secure. It checks all the boxes that Steve Gibson and I have for things like no logging, privacy. Read the privacy policy. You'll feel good about it. I like the fact that they have servers all over the world, which means you can emerge into the public internet. You're encrypted from wherever you are, from your computer. By the way, they have apps for Windows, Mac, iPhone, Android. One button click turns on the VPN. You won't even know it's working because it's so fast. It's just protecting you. So your data is now encrypted from you to the ExpressVPN server you choose. And as I said, you could choose servers all over the world, which means you can appear to be coming from England or Singapore or anywhere in between. And that's really great. Maybe there are a few of you who say, well, why would I want to use this? Well, nowadays, I think everybody's very aware of privacy. And the fact that if you're on a phone, you know, a lot of what you're doing is being logged by your internet service provider, by your carrier. At home, same thing. If you're in an open Wi-Fi hotspot at a coffee shop or in a hotel, even if you're entering a password, you're on the same network as a bunch of other people, including that shady-looking guy in the hoodie in the corner. And you really you want to protect yourself. ExpressVPN, it's great to have in your toolkit. It's great to have the app on all your devices. And if you look and you say, I don't know about that guy, you could press the button and boom, you're encrypted. It is fantastic. Protects your privacy, protects your security, easy to use. It essentially anonymizes your internet traffic right up to the point where you emerge on the public internet. But at that point, your IP address is wherever that server is. So it anonymizes your IP address. It hides your true IP address. You could safely surf on public Wi-Fi without being snooped on. Number one, according to TechRadar, costs less than $7 a month. Protect your online activity today. Privacy is a right. Yeah, assert your rights. Use ExpressVPN. And by the way, right now you get 3 extra months free when you subscribe for a year at expressvpn.com/windows. I think you're going to be glad you have this in your back pocket. expressvpn.com/windows, the best VPN. And 3 extra months free with a 1-year package. expressvpn.com/windows. Speaking of Windows, Paul Thurrott, Mary Jo Foley, we're talking about Windows. We're talking about Microsoft. We're talking about Office 365. I don't want to use that Office 2019 anymore. I want Office 365.
Yes, you do.
Unless you live in the Netherlands, maybe you don't.
Oh, really? What's that all about?
So last fall, the Dutch Justice Ministry put out a warning. It wasn't like a reprimand, but it was a warning to Microsoft saying, hey, we think what you're doing with data collection in Office Pro Plus violates the GDPR.
Oh.
And
Oh.
Yeah, they said, we don't like how you're collecting personal data on a grand scale. And we also realize some of our Dutch data is ending up on U.S. servers, which is a no-no.
Oh.
And so just last week, I saw a report in Politico saying Microsoft has pledged that they're going to update Office Pro Plus in some way by the end of April so that this will head off any kind of privacy violations that the Dutch ministry thought were occurring. Now, what they don't say is, how are they going to update it? Like, what are they going to do? You know, they said they're going to take additional steps to make it easier for customers to understand where their data needs to go and which data Microsoft needs to see. But will that be enough to appease those Dutch? We don't know. Yeah, I'm curious what they're going to do because, you know, we do know that there's telemetry data that Microsoft collects in Office and Windows and a lot of their products. And Microsoft has always said, you know, there's some of this that we have to collect in order for the products to work properly. So it's kind of a slippery slope in my mind if they suddenly say, okay, we're going to fix this because we agree there's some privacy issues. But then if that happens, what about Windows and what about other versions of other products?
You don't really need that data.
Right.
What is some of the issue that in Office you're saving to iCloud? Or not iCloud, OneDrive?
You better not be saving iCloud.
No. Is it that OneDrive you can't specify what country you're saving to? Is that part of it?
I don't know. It's very vague to me exactly what they said. They just said some of the data is being saved to U.S. servers and... Huh. It sounded like telemetry data more than your personal data.
Got it.
But yeah.
Yeah. So GDPR requires that you have control of your data, essentially. That you know, if you want it. And by the way, if you want it deleted, you can ask the company, hey, you know, don't collect that data and delete what you got.
Yep.
I don't even know if Microsoft can do that with telemetry. Do they identify it? They probably don't.
Yeah. Well. They do sort of, you can see what data they collect in Windows 10
right. you
if you like reading XML.
Yeah.
I don't know. I say that a lot, don't I? I don't know.
Yeah.
Here's a crazy go ahead. Keep going. I'm sorry.
I was just going to say, what makes this kind of ironic is Microsoft's out there, you know, Brad Smith, the head of the legal counsel for Microsoft, is out there saying, we think GDPR regulations are going to be everywhere, not just in Europe. Mm-hmm. And we feel like we're at the forefront, right, of the companies who are doing the right thing this way. So this is kind of a little black eye, right?
Well, you know what, though? Honestly, I think they probably are at the forefront. This is a misstep for sure. I mean, I think Microsoft, I don't know what they have for data centers, if any, in the Netherlands or wherever this is. Mm-hmm. But, you know, in Germany, obviously, there are very specific rules around keeping data in the country. Microsoft does adhere to that. I mean, at some point, they're going to have to be that strict probably with everyone's data. I think this was unexpected. And
I think part of this is still in the early phases of GDPR, and it may not be immediately clear to companies what is compliant, what isn't.
Mm-hmm.
And this is just the Dutch, you know, agency saying, hey, this is not compliant. All Microsoft has to do is say, oh, okay, well, good, we will fix that.
Plus, and now we know going forward. If they need to ship updates, they can just use all those old AOL CDs. They'll be fine.
Well, of course, that's the larger question. We always talk about this on Twig and other shows is, you know, is GDPR going to break the internet or break companies' abilities to do what they want to do? And so, or what they have to do to make the, if, you know.
You know what, honestly, if all that this accomplishes is slowing down the massive no questions asked expansion that's been occurring over the past few years with cloud services, I think that's going to be fine. You know,
really?
I don't think that there has been a lot of oversight internally at any company, but more of a everyone full steam ahead kind of a thing. And so I think GDPR has caused these companies to kind of stop for a second and say, hold on a second. All right, what are we doing here? And I think that's healthy.
You're right. That's not a bad thing. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's not a bad thing. It's a terrifying thing.
It is.
That's terrifying for Microsoft. But, you know, for I think for people, or for Facebook or for Google, whoever. But I think for normal people,
for us,
it's like, yes, it's good.
Yeah, it's good. It's good. I was hoping you guys would come in with your backgrounds blurred.
Yeah. So I can't use that because I'm using the Windows 10 version of Skype, and it does not support, to my knowledge, background blurring.
Oh, this is a new feature in Skype.
It's in the desktop client.
Only in the desktop. Oh, okay.
I believe so, yeah. So we have been using it at work. I see it with other people. I don't have it.
I wanted to see what it looked like. Does it look like a beautiful Richard Avedon fashion shot?
Wait. Alex is saying he thinks it's in the Windows 10 version too.
Then let's turn it on, baby. How do you do it?
Is that my Alex? Our Alex?
Your Alex, yeah.
Because I looked for it, but I couldn't find it.
Paul, right click on your thing.
Right click on my thing.
Okay, right click on your face.
Are you serious? Right click on my face?
That's what he just said. He may be drunk. Okay. Sometimes, you know.
It says see full video feed.
There's no
That's my only
background.
Option.
How about you, Mary Jo? Because you're using this Skype for desktop.
I'm using the desktop version on Windows 7 right now.
7?
Oh, then, jeez.
Guys, so, Windows 7 still in support?
Windows 7 is fully supported. You're right. Sorry.
How do I do it, though? I'm trying to see. Appearance?
Yeah. You would think.
Not.
Yeah, I've looked through the whole thing. I never, I mean, maybe it's somewhere else. I don't know.
No, I don't see how or where.
Are you an
Windows
insider
expert,
build?
Unable to figure out how a Windows application works.
Are you on an insider build?
No, not on an insider build.
No, but Paul? Paul is.
I am. But yeah, this would be up to date with the shipping. Actually, maybe that's not true.
Yeah, that's what they Alex
did freeze.
Is saying.
They did
maybe,
free. They free. Yeah, they
you
freeze
have the
app,
frozen
so right.
Skype. Yeah.
Oh,
that's right. That's right. Okay,
so
maybe
don't
that's
have
fine.
A new Skype.
See, that's what you get for living on the edge.
I guess he wasn't drunk.
Not this time, Leo. Let's.
I like to tease credit. Alex. He's a wonderful fellow and rarely drunk.
But he's a fun drunk.
No, he's not. In fact, I've never seen him drink. I don't know if he does drink, so I don't want to.
Seen him drink a beer.
I hate to break it to you, but
yeah,
he does drink.
Oh crap! We did, you know. That's maybe too insane.
Have you heard the term day drinking, Leo?
One of our staff is a expert mixologist, and at some point, they started on Friday. They would start afternoon on Friday. He would be mixing drinks for the staff. At some point, it started to spread through the week.
Russell, right?
No, Russell is too. Russell is too, but he's not on staff. He's not always here.
Yeah.
And we finally had to say, okay, knock it off. No more cocktails during work hours. As pleasant as a work environment as this creates, it's probably not a good idea. So only I can do that. And Richard.
My wife is getting into this mixology stuff. And then, of course, my wife was with Mary Jo on Monday night, and they tried to poison me with alcohol.
Oh.
And succeeded.
You did that yourself.
Wonderfully.
Oh. Was this at Rattle and Hum?
It started there. No, that was the next day.
Oh, man. Yeah, I think...
You did all that damage yourself. Don't blame
When you come
us.
Out here, we have a number of really good... This is the new thing. This is all the rage in California is mixology. Yeah. We have some amazing
Leo,
bars.
Now that you're on the keto thing, what you need to learn about is sugar-free cocktails, which are a thing. We have a bunch of
sugar-free alcohol speeders. Can you drink, though? Doesn't it all turn into sugar once you...
Any alcohol is fine. Leo, alcohol is God's gift to you. It is.
You mean I can eat
Well, no, I mean
steak,
like
alcohol?
Yes, steak and a scotch.
And a scotch, and I can live on that.
Full on keto. Full on
no
keto.
Beer, though.
No, I understand. Beer is bread. In fact, some
dry
Germans eat
okay.
it for breakfast.
Dry wine is low in carbs.
Right. Good, because Lisa likes dry wine. Okay, that's good to know.
Yeah,
I'll tell
dry
her
red wine in particular.
I'm not a big drinker,
fun.
To be honest with you. I don't. I have enough problems keeping my brain cells intact. Last thing I want to do is send toxic chemicals their way.
I've been trying to kill my brain for the past 15 years or so.
So anyway, background blur, which I think is a neat idea. It's all done, obviously, computationally, right? It's just figuring out where you are.
It's not bad. Obviously, if you move quickly, you get that kind of effect on the edge of the arm or whatever. But if you're just kind of, I think for how we do the show, I'll try to make this happen for next week. I should have thought of the insider part of that. But just, you know, our shapes, and we don't have crazy hairdos or anything, I think it would work pretty well. And then we would look even more like we're in the same room because the blur in the background would be the same color.
I think that's interesting. Well, as you guys enter the...
I know. Once we figure out how to do it.
The 21st century.
The problem is Paul's in the future. Yeah. Mary Jo's in the past. Only I am in the present. So,
yeah.
Right.
And none of us can figure it out.
Teams is going to get something similar too, right?
Yeah. So Teams already, they already announced background blur for Teams. But this week, Brad heard, and I heard the same thing too, that they're also working on letting people substitute customized backgrounds, not just background blur.
That's what I want to see.
I would be really into that. Right. You could drop in a special background. And that may be available by the end of calendar Q2, I think. And that would just be in Teams, I think, not in Skype.
There's a kind of a risk in enterprise tools of making them too fun, too. Because these features are features that, the home versions of these kinds of programs have had for a long time.
Well, except you think about it, right?
Apps.
Yeah.
Yeah. On a mobile app, like say you're in an airport and you want to join a conference call and you don't want all this distraction behind you and it's a work call.
Okay.
I can see why blurring would be useful there.
Well, at home, too, if you work out of your home, you may not want people to know where you are exactly.
I think that's blurring makes a lot of sense because your bed's not made. You got, the kids are coming in. Yeah. I wouldn't mind just making a dark outline, but. The backgrounds, you put Cabo behind you or you're in Cabo and you put your office behind you.
Because that's what everyone would do. It'd be like a palm tree in the beach.
Yeah. That's kind of, and I think Slack kind of did that. Some people complain that Slack is too much fun.
Right.
Too
many gifts. Too many gifts.
It's too unwork-like.
Stickers. Yeah. Yeah. And so it might be, I don't know. I'm sure Teams is looking at Slack and saying, well, we got to do that because that's what everybody wants.
Yeah.
I've been interested in this, and I thought you could explain it to me because I saw this story about LinkedIn Live, and I wonder could we stream our show on LinkedIn Live?
Yeah. So the details for this are very sketchy. It looks to me like Microsoft only briefed TechCrunch about this for some reason. Of everybody,
all the stories these days.
I know. I think it's because of it's LinkedIn, it's the Valley, and so they're like, "Yeah, TechCrunch, that makes sense, right?" But this wasn't even an announcement. Like, I can't even find an announcement anywhere. Microsoft didn't announce it, and LinkedIn didn't even announce it on their blog. But what they're going to do is create a live streaming video platform that'll be on LinkedIn. The only piece of this that has anything to do with Microsoft is the encoding. They're using Azure Media Services for the encoding. But otherwise, it's their own video platform that they're building, LinkedIn's building.
Yeah, but they're owned by Microsoft.
They are, but they're not using any of Microsoft's technology.
Oh.
Which
not
is
Skype,
like kind of
not
like,
Teams,
okay.
None of that, huh?
Nope.
That's interesting.
Nope, not Office. Well, I thought they'd use Office Stream, Microsoft's streaming video platform. Nope.
They are working with online streaming services like Wowza, which that's actually good.
Right. If you want to make your content look more professional when you stream it.
Yeah, I think TechCrunch didn't really actually understand what that meant.
Yeah. It's just vague what they're going to do. And LinkedIn supposedly said to them, we want to have it be content that it pertains to work. So things like press announcements and earnings calls and that kind of stuff that they want people to stream on the news feed through the platform.
Well, I just want to volunteer Windows Weekly if you want some quality content, I think we'd fit nicely there.
I do too. And it's going to be a closed beta to start, US only. And there's supposed to be at some point a sign up page for people who think they would be good candidates to try it out. So we should sign up.
Yeah.
When that page comes out.
Okay. Okay.
So
it isn't like kind of wide. It's not like they're going to compete with YouTube, Twitch.
YouTube.
They're not even compete with themselves with Mixer. It's a different.
It's a whole different thing.
But
yeah.
I thought maybe a Mixer for business is an interesting idea.
That's kind of what Office Stream is, right? I mean, Microsoft Stream, the thing that is their
Chris
video
Capicella's secret Microsoft feature that nobody knows about.
Yeah, I don't know about it. You think I'd know about it?
It's their video platform for business that's part of Office 365 called Microsoft Stream.
But I always thought of that as more like you're streaming your meetings or you're streaming, you know, it's a private streaming, yeah. not public. This looks public facing.
Right. Yeah, you're right. Right. You're right. That's more like for a closed meeting. Yeah. But LinkedIn is saying they want people to stream company meetings and live Q&As and.
Okay. Yeah. All hands and stuff like that.
All hands.
That would make sense. But you wouldn't make that public. So there'll have to be a way to say this is just for invite only, and this is for general public. Yeah. But I got the impression again, you know, we only know this from TechCrunch, which is, you know, we're it's like telephone.
It's always good when the one source has no idea what they're talking about. Yeah. It's just like that telephone game thing.
Yeah, it's telephone. But it would be really nice if Microsoft had some sort of business focused, publics facing like Mixer, or YouTube, but for business.
Right.
I think that would be very interesting.
Mixer for business. That's a good idea.
Yeah.
Well, when they first announced Microsoft Stream, when it was called Office Stream, I think they described it as YouTube for business, but then they stopped saying that.
No, that's a bad.
Yeah. They're like, no, that's not really what we're doing.
get your corporate crotch shots in here. That's not what you want. Mixer, though, but see, that's the funny thing is Microsoft has this technology, and in fact, it's really good. Yeah. Mixer works great. For us,
but only for gaming, right? Isn't it?
Well, we're on Mixer.
No, not really.
That's true. That's true. You can. They just play it up as a gaming.
Same thing with Twitch. Amazon's Twitch. They play it up as gaming, and that's where you go to see gaming. But there's lots of other stuff on.
You could do
us.
Other things. Yeah,
we're on there too. Yeah. Well, it's funny because it stopped us at first. We thought, well, can we be on Mixer? Can we be on Twitch? Mm-hmm. And then we just did it. Actually, Twitch we had been on anyway, way back when it was Justin TV, and we just never left. And they never killed it. So we just figured, okay, I guess it's okay for us. Mm-hmm. And in fact, it's been a great place for us to sit. I was worried, you know, I mean, we really, for our video streams, our live streams, we rely on, we can't pay for that. So we rely on these services. And remember, we were first on Stickham. This is before you, Mary Jo, but in the early days, we were on Stickham. And then eventually we added Ustream. Stickham went away. Ustream got bought by IBM, and they sent a notice out. You're going to have to pay to everybody at some point. And I was starting to worry that maybe we would lose all of these. Because, like, how
could now there are a ton of them.
Now we have no it was really a question of we got
it's
too many.
It's kind of amazing.
Yeah. Because I thought this is so expensive. This is, you know, for them, this is to give this away. But then YouTube's, you give it away. And
it's all about video ads, right?
I guess I mean, so, yeah.
That's what LinkedIn wants too. They want video ads.
So they'll run ads in this stuff.
Yep.
Interesting.
Maybe we could have work meetings where if somebody has a good idea, we could fund them a little money out of a microtransaction thing.
I think they should have Twitch style buttons and say, pay me, pay me. Ching, ching, ching.
Yeah, like I just say something nice about someone, he plays a sound off of his soundboard.
I have.
This is like the future of work meetings is pretty dumb. I call it BYOS, bring your own stupidity.
Yeah. Well, I have the little Stream Deck thing that's intended for Twitch streamers to, you know, so you could play sound effects, you know, in the
You respond to people who are saying stuff to you as you play a game.
Yeah.
You know.
It's fun, but I never use it.
Is that the Can You Hear Me Now? What is that sound? Is that what's that from? AT&T?
Oh, that's Intel.
Intel, of course. I'm sorry.
It is. Yeah.
You might recognize
for some reason, I was picturing like Tom Selleck doing like a clear voice commercial or something.
It kind of is that sound.
You know?
Remember that? Booting up a computer, baby.
Jeez.
That's the floppy drive.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
The good old days.
I have it all in my Stream Deck. I have it right here, my friends. Just, you know, and you can have many pages. Yeah. I have you know, animal sounds. I have.
Nice.
Gongs.
There we go.
Yeah, I put that in there for you, Mary Jo.
Huge mistake.
Thank you.
Anyway.
Mary Jo's, maybe I will get into gaming.
This is the future of business meetings.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sorry. Our CEO and president.
It's the business of tomorrow today.
Profits are down.
Oh man. It would make earnings calls a lot more entertaining.
Oh man.
Okay, enough of that. Enough of that. Let's talk. Let's see here. Oh, we're gonna get. Let's get a couple more things in, and then we'll bring Richard in. He's probably champing at the bit, as they say, to get in the show. But
Thank you for saying that correctly. By the way,
not chomping.
Not chomping. A lot of people think it's chomping.
I was watching a TV show where they were debating champing or chomping. And Julia,
there's no debating things like this.
It's not debatable. Julia Louis-Dreyfus, of all people, was saying, no, it's chomping.
Oh, jeez.
Champing. It's a horse. They're champing.
I'm sure her. I always go to celebrities for intelligence stuff. You know, like, tell me how to vote. Tell me what diet to be on. Yeah, tell me if I should be inoculated. Yeah. That's who I want to go to, those people.
I ask tech writers for all my information.
You know.
Bloggers.
There was a big debate. There was a big debate on Twitter like a couple days ago about on-premise versus on-premises. I'm like, guys, it's on-premises. We're done.
Yeah, there's no debating that either. I don't like that kind of thing.
Premise isn't even a word. I mean, it is a word, but it doesn't mean what you think it means.
No.
Yeah.
No.
It's
on-premise today, Mary Jo, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, she's in her house. Okay. Surface. Yeah. Surface. I'm ready for new surfaces.
Let's blow us through this as quickly as possible.
Okay.
Surface Pro 6, Surface Laptop 2, Surface Studio 2, and Surface headphones are now or will soon all be available in many more markets than they were before I started that sentence.
new but unnamed, anyway, according to...
Yeah, most of them we don't actually know which markets they're being expanded to, but whatever. It's happening, apparently.
Okay. All right. 20 new but unnamed markets.
Yes.
And same with Surface headphones, right?
Yep. Those are named. But whatever. Anyway. You know, this is how these things always go. Microsoft, actually, they've gotten quicker than they were in the past. But, you know, remember there were entire years where a Surface PC would come out and just be available in the United States and Canada, basically. And then maybe eventually it would make its way to Western Europe, whatever. But they're actually much quicker than they used to be. But
good. We're
still seeing this kind of stage rollout thing, so. That's all that is.
Let's let Mary Jo sleep for a little bit while we do the Xbox update, and then we'll get to Richard Campbell.
This will be quick, too. So a couple of Xbox stories. Xbox System Software 1902 is out. This is not a huge release. This is not the, you know, the Xbox version of 19H1. That will be coming in about 2 months. I think they're going to call that one 1904 on the Xbox, because why would anything have the same name across platforms? But... mostly just small things improve performance on the dashboard, which they do in every single release, obviously. And I think I mentioned earlier, they made improvements to the quick start functionality, which is not called fast start, so that those games install more quickly, whatever.
No plans to change the UI again? I mean, we're pretty stable on that now.
I wouldn't say never, but they're not going to do it in a minor release like this, and they didn't. So it's just the next time you turn on your Xbox, you're going to have to walk away, make a sandwich, and come back. It's just going to take a little while.
Yeah, I hate that. I even have it turned on to auto update, and it never does. Is that
it's still? I know. That just happens to me too. I do too. And I my goal for this thing is I turn it on and it works. But oftentimes I turn it on and I have to install an update, I'm on bits and stuff. But I don't know why.
I try to get in the habit of actually checking it before I want to play a game.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because that's the worst. You know, I want to play now. You turn the thing on
go get a keto sandwich
which
is nothing, by the way. It's just a slice of meat.
A keto sandwich. It's a piece. Well, a keto sandwich, you could roll cheese has a little bit of carbs, but you could put some cheese in there, some mayonnaise. You know, that's good.
But no bread. That's the point.
No
it's
bread.
Not a sandwich without bread. I'm just saying.
You
could have almond
that,
biscuits with something in
that's what I've been doing. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, I distracted. I do want to mention Apex Legends because you had an interesting article about this. Now, this is the new Electronic Arts based, and that means a lot of people are expecting the worst. Electronics Arts based Battle Royale game to compete with Fortnite, PUBG.
Yep.
And is it on Xbox or is it not?
Yeah.
It is.
It is.
It just came out. It's the same free-to-play, right?
Mm-hmm. It's excellent. And so, you know, Fortnite is this phenomenon. It is a mainstream phenomenon. It's a huge moneymaker. This year, we're going to see esports surpass $1 billion. Fortnite's going to be a part of that.
It's fun to watch.
And Fortnite,
it's fun to watch.
Yeah. Fortnite's rise to fame and fortune has been very quick and unprecedented, I think, in many ways, except for one thing. This new game that just came out last week is already starting to surpass Fortnite. And I don't think anyone saw that coming. Like you said, EA has been on the dumps. Everyone has. Activision Blizzard is down. All of these game companies that have well-established shooter franchises like Call of Duty, Battlefield, have had to adapt to this new Battle Royale phenomenon, you know. And I think the general consensus, I don't like the kind of Minecraft-like construction part of Fortnite. And that's what this game leaves out, which is kind of interesting. And so it's kind of an interesting combination of PUBG, which has fairly realistic-looking graphics, but is slow-moving, especially on Xbox, and Fortnite, which has really fast-moving graphics, but is more cartoony. The graphics in this game are fantastic. The performance is fantastic. It seems like a great game. And, you know, not for me, I guess, as I was saying before we started recording, the issue I have with this is that they don't have any progression, sense of progression. So you start every game with nothing. And the first thing you have to do is go on a scavenger hunt to go find weapons or armor or supplies of various kinds. And I just want to start the game with stuff, you know, and fight. I don't want to run around looking for stuff. But as far as what it looks like and how it
looks,
it plays,
great. It's kind of
impressive.
In between PUBG. It's not super. It's not
right.
I don't know how to describe this. It's not. It's not
Call of Duty realistic. No, but it is way more. It's got a nice style. It's graphically, it's more impressive than Fortnite for sure. And more, I would say more like Call of Duty or Fortnite, PUBG than it is like Fortnite.
It's going to come down to the gameplay, I think. That's really
But here's the thing. So here's what's amazing about this. Fortnite, let me see if I can find these figures here. Fortnite needed 2 weeks to reach 10 million gamers. Apex Legend did it in 3 days.
Whoa.
Fortnite needed 3 months to reach 30 million players. Apex Legends has 25 million gamers after just 1 week.
Yeah.
So it's already the most viewed title on Twitch.
One on Twitch. That tells you something right there.
It's impressive. And a week ago I would have said, you know, it's a Fortnite world with just living in it. And Fortnite doesn't just disappear, obviously. Fortnite's still huge, but it's amazing that these guys, like EA publishes the Battlefield series, for example. And they have a lot of longtime franchises, a lot of sports franchises like Madden and so forth. They're kind of one of the old dogs. Like it's surprising that this came out of EA.
A lot of people say it's because EA had a hands off in developing it.
Doing the right thing.
Yeah, yeah. It
reminds me of Unreal Tournament a little bit. You know, it's got that look a bit. It's fast. You know,
it's very hairy. All I did was watch Twitch, and I felt like I don't even speak the language that these people are speaking. I don't
understand. Do you have any motion sickness problems?
No, but I'm not watching, but maybe playing I would. I don't know. So I could fire that up on my Xbox, huh?
Yep.
All right.
It's huge, by the way. I don't remember the exact figure. The day I downloaded it, I was like, wait, what is this thing? It's like, I don't want to say 35 gigs, but it was some huge, it's a huge game. It's really, really big.
By the way, I have a 3 terabyte drive on there, but that's why I love the Xbox app. Because I can from here, start the download, and it'll be there. It'll be there when I get home. So I'm going to do that. All right. I think that means we should take a break and get
see if
Richard
we can connect
on the
with
line.
Sir Campbell,
host of .NET Rocks and Run His Radio, and a much beloved figure, unlike these two. In the world.
No, he really is the polar opposite of
just
us.
Just kidding. No, I'm teasing. You are. What I love is that there isn't any, you know, competition between you guys. That, you know, we're all the Windows podcasts and journalists all kind of, at least on the surface, work together. And are
that's not true. I can't stand most of those people.
Okay,
what do you mean?
I said on the surface. We plumbed the depths of Paul's subconscious, and discovered he's a hate.
Screw all of them. I don't know what that was all about.
Paul's consciousness is like a data lake. Infinitely.
A little leaky.
Our show today brought to you by Captera. I really am a fan of Captera because, for one thing, people always call me on the radio show looking for business solutions. I have a veterinary office. What's the best, you know, office management software? I don't know, and I'm the wrong person to ask. Worse, probably Googling it, because when you Google that kind of thing, you're going to get a bunch of answers, but it's not going to be in any way, you know, vetted or in any order. Captera is a free solution. Think of it as kind of Google for business software. You go to Capterra.com/windows. You'll be looking in 700 categories of software, from project management, email marketing, veterinary office management, yoga studio management, anything you might want to use in business. Now, here's what makes Capterra extra special. First of all, you can, and you'll see this when you go to Capterra.com/windows, you can narrow it down. So you can say, I want, you know, the software in this category, email marketing. And then you have a checkbox. You say, these are the features I have to have. Boom, boom, boom. It'll give you a list. You could do a head-to-head comparison. Get all the features you need to know. And then the reviews. And I tell you, these days, I don't buy anything without reading the reviews. But on other sites, sometimes, like you go to Amazon, is that review from the manufacturer or a competitor? I don't know. 750,000 reviews on Capterra from real vetted users. So you're talking to your colleagues who are using that software and finding out the ins and outs, the pros, the cons. That's the information you want. You don't ask Leo or Google. Ask people who are using the software. You'll get everything you need to make an informed decision. It'll even say whether there's free trials, give you, you know, the website to go to, all of that. And this is all free. No wonder millions of people use Capterra every month to find the right tools for their business. You should be too. It's Capterra, C-A-P-T-E-R-R-A, Capterra.com/windows. If you're in the market, if you want to make 2019 the year that you stop using that funky old software that requires Windows XP and start using something modern, that's, by the way, a very good reason. If your software is using requires Windows 7, here's a really good reason. If your software requires Internet Explorer, Capterra.com/windows, Capterra.com/windows. Find something modern, up to date, read the reviews. You'll know everything you need to know to make the right choice. And we are really happy Capterra exists, because I can just point people there and say, I don't know, but Capterra does. All right, I have to now press some strange buttons and invoke in some incantations.
Is this a keto thing?
It's a keto thing. And in with any luck, let me get that dead chicken and swing it around my head here. Hold on. With any luck, Richard Campbell will join us in the middle.
We can see him but not hear him.
Okay. Oh.
We can hear him.
Oh, there he is.
There he is.
Oh, can we hear him?
He's just not talking. That's all.
He's, hi, guys. Richard Campbell, .NET Rocks, run his radio. Hello.
Welcome to our Windows
Greetings from
sandwich.
The snowy Northwest.
Oh, man. Are you in Seattle?
No, I'm in Vancouver.
Vancouver.
So we're just as snowy as Seattle. We're just not that panicked about it.
Yeah, you're Canadians. You understand. Or is it Vancouver, Washington? Vancouver, Canada?
No, the real Vancouver.
The real Vancouver. Right. Awesome. Yeah, Canadians take this with
We don't get a lot of snow here, right? Like we're the part of Canada the rest of Canada is very offended by because there's so little snow here. But yeah, it's been a pretty epic
Where's week. Your toque, eh?
I'm wearing my flannel, eh? So I'm ready.
All right. Why is Richard here besides the fact we just love him?
Yeah, I don't know. I've been watching the whole show, and it's like I got comments on everything you guys have been doing, not the least of which is it's not the notes? Heisenberg uncertainty principle. It's the observer effect.
Oh, pardon me, Mr. Campbell. Yeah. If I had known you were listening, I would have gotten it right. I just figured these numbskulls won't know the difference.
We just nodded our heads. We had no idea.
They were like, yeah.
Yeah, that sounds right.
Funny. Now, the reason Richard's on the show is we were talking back and forth on email about the coming Edge browser that's going to have Chromium underneath.
Mm-hmm.
And he has some very interesting and not so crazy ideas about what might happen when this thing comes out.
Well, it's a strange time. You know, these big companies now are playing in what used to be this, you know, Richard Stallman, everything is free open source community. And, you know, Microsoft's now the largest contributor of open source lines of code in GitHub. And Google's been doing the same thing for many, many years. And the Chromium engine and is all open source, right? It's all free to be there. But as these companies start to run into each other, you're seeing some interesting political physics. You know, this Chromium is one. Like Kubernetes is one of the great examples. Mm-hmm. The container technology, right? Brendan Burns, working for Google, They've been making this thing. It was used internally for years. They put it out into the world. And then Brendan Burns goes and joins Microsoft. And he's still the lead contributor for Kubernetes. Of course, Kubernetes is spread everywhere. But as soon as this announcement around Chromium came along, you're like, huh, how is this going to work? Mm-hmm. You know, browsers more than just Chromium is just a rendering engine. It's a bunch of things, but they're going to focus on the rendering engine part. And that makes a lot of sense because we like our pages to render well. And Edge has just always struggled to render well. But the rest of the browser, that's going to be different.
Right.
Yeah.
So you start working through that. Obviously, Microsoft is contributing to open source projects. Chromium lives on GitHub. They're going to start contributing to Chromium. But it's sooner or later, you're going to hit a point where it's like there's one contributor going this way and one contributor going the other way.
Yep.
And it's still all Google employees that are the controlling, the guys who can accept the pull requests, the administrators and so forth. So my immediate question when I saw this is, okay, well, when are you going to fork it?
Oh, man. Right. But if they fork it, what's the point, right?
It blows the whole thing up. Well, the real question you have to ask is, why are they doing this at all? Like, why make a browser? Heck, why does Google make a browser? Like, what's the point of making a browser? It costs a lot of money to make a browser. The Chromium project's enormous.
Mm-hmm. Well, we know why Google makes a browser. That's not really a mystery. This is drives traffic, and they make a lot of money on search traffic. And if the browser has...
Yeah. But Microsoft has completely different reasons for making browsers. And I over time, I think it's become less clear why they were doing it.
What if
it's the most used application?
That's exactly right. That would have been my point, which is the reason that Microsoft got in trouble with the EU is and the reason they put it in anyway is because that's what business uses. And increasingly.
Right. But the most used application in Windows is not Microsoft's browser.
Right.
And nothing they've done was going to change that.
Right.
Yeah, what did Edge crack? 2%?
Yeah,
maybe.
It's really low single digit.
Bill Gates always said, look, of course Microsoft didn't capture all the value in being a platform. That's what being a platform means. Hmm. You don't need to make every app that is being used on that platform. You create value for other companies.
Yeah, but the browser is an apps platform. You know, the central threat of the browser back when Netscape was still a thing was that they're going to take the apps platform away from Windows. Remember the Mark Andreessen quote about, you know, turning Windows into a, I don't remember the exact quote, poorly, you know, designed set of device drivers or whatever. Those guys were way ahead of their time. Today, Google with Chrome OS has an apps platform that runs on the web browser.
And
that's
just a browser.
Fairly sophisticated.
Mm-hmm. It's just a browser.
Yeah.
Do you think that's is that Windows Lite? Is that what Windows Lite's going to be?
Well, especially when you get into progressive web apps and WebAssembly and things like that. Like from an IT perspective, I'm putting my run as hat on now. Yeah. Why would I ever install another piece of software on a desktop machine ever again?
Yeah.
I can do everything, certainly in the corporate, the enterprise world, via the browser that already has the privileges, like all that stuff is done.
Sure.
And I just don't know.
Maybe you like the registry.
Oh, boy. I love that. It's job security.
We got to go back to your original statement because you said three things kind of rapid fire right up front that I think need to go a little deeper on, right? So the very first thing you said, I think, was that when you first heard this, you wondered, well, you know, how fast before they fork it. And I will say, one of the big complaints that I've gotten about, you know, from readers and listeners of the show about this change is what you just described. You know, the Google employees who are the gatekeeper of what happens to Chromium, what happens when they say no to Microsoft again and again and again?
Yeah.
Microsoft
is betting. And looking at the Brendan Burns example, what happens when one of those Google guys joins Microsoft?
Well, see, that would actually be okay for Microsoft.
I think unless
they booted them right off of there, you know.
Well, and they haven't yet. I mean, this is where we get into that interesting political physics. Is now you're doing all this stuff in public. If you choose to read it, like Microsoft on the dev side at least has no secrets anymore. Every feature they're working on is showing up in GitHub as they work on it. So what does that ultimately look like from the Chromium perspective? Like that optics means if somebody moves, you kick them off. That's not good optics.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And the Google team and the Microsoft team on the browser side, you know, there's the Chakra guys and the V8 guys, like they've always worked hand in hand. The current lead writer for the the ECMA specification is a Microsoft employee. Like, those guys are actually quite friendly.
That's always been true, and that confuses people. But the problem is, when you go higher up in the chain, you know, the one thing that didn't happen when they made this decision was, does Google and Microsoft have a relationship at a higher level that will ensure some sort of partnership? And they do not.
Yeah,
and this is the thing. You know, word comes down from on high on the Google side. We're not doing this thing just because Microsoft needs it for their browser.
Right.
I
also wonder what browser they're going to make. If they're just making a Chrome copy, like, there's no reason. Like, feature
they
of
say
Edge
no, though.
Will be distinct?
They've said no to that. They've said they believe there are things in Edge that are different enough and important enough that they think there's still a place for that browser, right?
Accessibility
is one.
Set aside tabs.
It's a great PDF reader.
It is a great PDF reader, although that's, you know, Chrome is also a PDF reader.
Yeah.
I just wonder if they're going to do something about the digital exhaust. I mean, you know that Google's in the business of collecting as much information about people as they can so they can work with their advertisers to optimize advertising. That's the most polite way I know to say it, and I'm a Canadian. But that's not how Microsoft makes money. Microsoft makes money selling cloud.
But on the other hand, they're not above sucking some exhaust.
No, they really aren't. And certainly, you know, I've watched your telemetry conversation today, and it's like, I sort of get that. The way I read the Dutch reaction to the to that data source was more, they didn't say you've broken the rules. They say are concerned.
Exactly.
Can you tell us more about what data you're collecting? Because they're not very forthcoming with the data that's being collected. And I don't think they actually want PII at all, personally identifiable information. I think it's telemetry that they care about.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And because they're always trying to make their product better. They do not ask the customer how they're using the product, because customers lie, right? They collect as much telemetry as they can.
Sure. This is how you're really using the product.
Actually do, right?
Oh, really? I run Windows Media. I play our center. I love that. It's awesome. It's good. I love it. I use it every day.
Oh, I get bad news for you, Leo.
Yeah.
What?
Joe Belfiore is crying right now.
He is.
It would be interesting to me if they would go serious after the digital exhaust part. Like, I would love to see a given browser what I emitted.
So there are examples of browsers built on Chromium that disable the Google tracking, you know, account sign-in stuff, whatever. I mean, presumably Microsoft could do the same, I guess. Yeah. But a company like Brave, you know, three people at the, in a back room somewhere, maybe is not a big threat to Google. But when Microsoft does it, Google has an unhealthy distrust of Microsoft. I mean, it's one of those things, like, I remember the bad old days. We've never trusted you. We get that things have changed, but they still have that weird, you know, I wonder.
And vice
versa.
They make
the mistake of thinking these big companies are all one entity, and they're just not.
True.
Right?
That's
like,
true.
There are many different pieces. Yeah, there's a chunk of Microsoft that works closely with a chunk of Google, but that's only individual pieces. It's not that simple. You get
on the Microsoft side, it's a pretty small chunk.
Yeah. Well, and it's interesting to see what'll be left there, right? I do think that part of what's happening with Edge is this rearranging of what Windows even looks like. Like, they're trying to figure out how Windows plays in their world today when it's a cloud world. But I do think that Microsoft could, you know, all of these different companies are wrestling with the idea of trying to be the kinder, gentler tech giant. You certainly, you know, Facebook and Apple and Google are getting a lot of attention these days for not being that kind or gentle. Microsoft's done a pretty good job of rehabilitating themselves, at least for certain people. I wonder if there's a play here that they get to.
Well, by the way, I think that actually helps Microsoft, right? Because Google taking steps to prevent Microsoft from doing something with their browser would be seen as some form of bullying of a company that's trying to do the right thing for users.
Yeah, and I think that's exactly the play you're getting to. Because we're doing this in public and the digital audio are watching, like now it's every time they make a move, there's sort of this assessment. It's most people are never going to look, but the few that do, there'll be an opportunity to try and do the right thing there. But
what if the tagline for the Edge that's based on Chromium is something like, here's the version of Chromium you can trust.
Chrome without the suck.
Let's throw, you know, how does Microsoft make money into this? Azure, right? So what if they built a dashboard, your personal security dashboard, it's part of your Office 365 subscription for $6 a month, that does show everything that was emitted from all of your Edge browsers everywhere. Heck, for a little bit more money, all of your children's browsers too. I don't know that you're going to want to see that.
Yeah, but that's interesting. You
know, it's it's a play in the sense, actually, that's useful. And it's also an opportunity to sort of distinguish yourself. You know, we've heard Satya say things about giving their users more control over their data. Let's see if they actually do it. And that's straight speculation on my part. But, you know, it's interesting. That's a play.
They're going to be a little more diplomatic with the first version. You know, I mean, I don't think they're going to go right after Google. Hey, we base this on Google's code. Here's all the places they're trying to screw you over.
Started the iPod only running on the Mac, right? Like, yes. A couple versions down the path.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Well, there is this project we've heard about called Project Bali, which is this thing Microsoft's working on that is a personal data bank that lets you see the information that's being collected about you, and then you decide what to do with that information. So that exists. That's like in private testing right now. So what if that's connected to the browser?
Yeah, that's an interesting experiment. And then let me throw another one, another project that's out there that's interesting. Tim Berners-Lee, you know, our friend. The web is his fault. Last year.
Well, you can't blame him. He was working on a Next Step machine.
It's true. I went and visited that machine. It's literally behind glass in the CERN Museum. That's with the sticker on it that says, do not turn off server.
There's a web. The web requires this.
Yes. Because it is the web. Yeah, it was at one point, the entire web was in that machine.
Yep.
Wow. But so TBL's new project is this thing called Solid. Mm-hmm. And Rudy's, he's talking about this idea of the decentralized web, of getting away from walled gardens, and about users having more control over their data. That when I use an e-commerce site, I don't type in all my personal information and essentially give it to that e-commerce site. I give them a token of some kind that says, hey, you got this for 30 days, enough time for you to deliver my order, and then it goes away by itself. And this is where I think Microsoft could really make a play. Make the Edge browser support Solid, and then while you're at it, make Azure services on the back end to build e-commerce site that's supported on the other side.
I believe this thing you're describing was something that he intended to be part of the web in the beginning. It's a little bit like what Brave is doing with some kind of a decentralized system for rewarding sites and so forth. But, you know, you see a little pieces of that in credit card companies that you purchase something using a fake credit card number for that one transaction, which kind of separates that commerce site from your credit card, which is smart, you know. Who wouldn't want this? It sounds
Solid sponsors MasterCard.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Interesting. Yep. Okay.
Yep. So your example is exactly. Yeah.
That's I think it's hugely compelling. And again, it's like this is what I find fascinating. As soon as you go down that path with decentralized web, I mean, that sells more Azure. So you totally get why Microsoft would want that. But they could do a good guy play, taking care of the user while going after the market spaces of Google and Facebook and Apple and Amazon.
What do you think was the, like, how bad do things have to be before Microsoft turns to Chromium as the browser core, right? The two basic theories are, we talked about the low market share or usage share, whatever, of the browser today on Windows. And then this future kind of Chromebook-like system that Microsoft's been trying to do for a few years now. You know, were the underpinnings of Edge so substandard that that thing was stillborn simply because it just couldn't happen on that platform, and they needed to go to something that was, you know, better performance, better rendering, better compatibility, whatever it might have been. I mean, like,
rumors that Chrome was really trying to damage the ability for Edge to render stuff, that they were adding features and playing that game, right? And I think this is what's clever about the Chromium is like, what if we just use the same rendering engine because it's only a rendering engine? You just sort of undermine that argument. But
even that's amazing.
Go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, you know, I talked of Google's irrational fear of Microsoft. You know, is a browser with like 3% usage share, and they're purportedly working to undermine it.
That report was not really real, I don't think.
But it's plausible because we know that Google does behave in this fashion. I think that one it's sort of a confirmation bias type thing, I guess. But Google, like I said, they do seem to institutionally have a weird fear of Microsoft.
Yeah,
I think nobody forgets the past, right? You can put the past behind you, but everybody remembers the things Microsoft did to make IE the dominant browser.
Well, and also that, I think there's a gestalt going on right now that if not for the DOJ things that happened in 99 through 2000, Google would never have existed.
Yeah. Apple would never have achieved the prominence that they've achieved, for sure. Mm-hmm. Microsoft was hobbled by that stuff.
Guys, in the research I'm doing for a book right now, what I find fascinating is I'm finding quotes about Bill Gates in like 95 and 96, where he would mention a market that Microsoft was considering an entry into, and all the companies that were in that market would immediately go down. And now Jeff Bezos does that on a disturbingly regular basis.
Yep. He does it with actual dollars. He buys company in that market and everything.
Microsoft killed, Go Computing is one of the early examples of that. Microsoft would just say, oh, yeah, we're working on that.
But then
that would say,
I think with this Chromium thing, there is the Admiral Akbar thesis that it's a trap.
Okay. Okay, yeah.
So that Microsoft.
But for whom?
And by the way, I think that there is. People trust Satya Nadella and trust the new Microsoft. But in the old days, the plan would be, okay, we get everybody to use it because it's open source Chromium, and then they fork it, and you've got you hooked.
Yeah, it's the embrace extend thing.
Yeah.
But Microsoft today is just embrace. It's kind of a cute and cuddly company.
It's a different company. Or is it? Or is it? Is it a trap?
It's where the money comes from, right? It's like, we just want you on Azure. We don't need to sell copies to Windows anymore.
The Satya Nadella thing is kind of interesting because I wonder with this in particular how much the senior leadership team or Satya Nadella even cares about this kind of decision. And that if they do care about it, it may literally have something to do with resources. And that conversation that we talked about, that we had earlier, where why are we investing so much money in this thing that is a commodity? Why are we employing so many people and always are behind the market leader? Why do we only have 3 point whatever, percent usage share? Why, how do we erase that, And that is honestly the kind of pragmatic leadership that we do see from Satya Nadella.
Totally. I think we're still reorganizing Windows. Like Windows is still not figured out, and Edge is in Windows.
Yeah.
And Chrome, I think the thing that does probably come up in the senior leadership team is Chrome, right? Chrome OS and how it's really killing them on Windows in a lot of markets. And it could hurt their attempt to get into the first line worker space even more. So I think that is also a driving factor. They're like, wait, like if our browser is completely unsuccessful, how are we going to do this?
Well, which it has been. Right?
Which it has been. And you can tell from Microsoft's regular communications about education gains, which are often just, Windows PC growth and education as a way to counter the Chrome OS story. That they are, in fact, very much concerned about that. But it's usually don't embrace the competitor when you're trying to beat them. It's kind of a weird dynamic. And I don't know if it's completely unprecedented, but it's kind of a strange thing.
Yeah. I don't know if you guys heard this. Somebody floated this idea to me, and I've kind of looked around about this to see if it was true. But I had somebody say to me, the Edge team was actually split on whether to use Chromium from the beginning or to use Trident. And it was a debate. And the team that
I could see that
sticking with Trident won.
Remember there were a lot of promises about Chrome compatibility when Edge was first being announced. Remember the idea was we were going to be able to just plug Chrome extensions right into Edge. And I wonder if part of that might have been some early mentality. Well, maybe these things aren't going to be so completely different. And actually,
they said I think there were people who actually went on the record and said it'll work. Yeah, the plugin model will be you use.
And that never plugin. Occurred.
and I wonder if we're just seeing the reshuffling inside of Microsoft. I made note that Larry Osterman just left the Windows team for Azure.
He did.
It's
I know.
Like 35 years at Microsoft. How many options do you think the guy's got, right? Like, I don't think you really need to work.
What future is there in Windows for a guy like that, right? Because that story, a multi-year veteran, multi-decade veteran on the Windows team going to Azure is more common than multi-year Microsoft veteran goes to Amazon. Right. You know, this is this happens a lot.
But not retire.
Right.
Right.
You know, like, doesn't need the money, still wants to work.
Wants to contribute.
Dave Cutler.
Yeah. You know, he doesn't want to put the emojis in the Windows keyboard. You know, maybe he wants to do something a little more substantial.
Yeah. Well, he's always a back-end engine guy and a wicked smart. His video series are great. But I do think we're seeing the wrestling match inside of Microsoft of what does Windows become? And the Edge is part of that. I would wonder if they just pull Edge away from Windows entirely. Like, why does it matter? Put it with the dev and the guys who knows how to work in open source and make it a different product, a different way.
That's interesting. I think the only reason it's in Windows is because it's going to form a central part of this coming Chromebook type system that they're working on. And who knows, maybe that itself is a last gasp at this type of thing. And
well, we keep hearing a rumor of an ARM device again, right? That ARM is going to come back around. So I would be excited to see that. You know, they've done, I think if you talk about the in the Satya era, what's been a success? Surface has been a success.
Yeah.
So more of that.
So how do you think this is going to play out? I mean, are you, you voiced some concerns, but I mean, if you had a guess, it's this time next year. Microsoft has released at least pre-release versions.
I think it within a year, everybody's going to be playing nice. Like you called it. You start small and explore. Yeah. But I don't think there's any intent. Mm-hmm. I think they're spending less money, building a more successful browser, hopefully, and seeing where that goes. And can they make good contributions, you know, one way or the other? Mm-hmm. Make it run better on Windows, right? Like goodness knows. Right. I guarantee you, if I pop Task Manager right now, Chrome is consuming more memory on my machine than anything else.
Sure. But it is the most often used application. So,
Well, and I get 20 of them that start when I boot the machine. So,
Look, if Microsoft can apply some of the magic, there are some neat things they've done in Edge, right? The scrolling, actually, the rendering is fantastic as far as the quality of text and so forth. The accessibility stuff is better. The performance is absolutely better. If they can make Chrome do that stuff, that's valuable. It's a very strange thing to market. Well, here's this thing. It's just like Chrome, except it's better in these five key areas. You know, whatever they are: battery life, performance, whatever. That would be valuable.
It is a titanic project, right? And for better or worse, like those guys know how to work on very big projects.
Mm-hmm. So the Titanic. Remind me again that how did that story end?
How many people are on it? Do you know, Richard?
I don't know. I'm looking at the GitHub project, and it's like 600 contributors. You know, it's so big you actually can't get a contributor dump. Like you can only look at 1 week's worth of contributed data on GitHub. You can't even work at a month because it just goes away. So
when do you think it's going to show up? Like, where is it?
I don't know. It'll be months. It's not a small thing.
You do? You think months?
Yeah, I think it'll be
months. I think we all thought we were going to see an early version end of January. The way they communicated it.
There's a sneaking suspicion that there's probably a build out there internally.
Yeah.
But you still have to go through the Microsoft process, right? Like their build requirements. It's one thing to get a demo or get a prototype together. It's another thing to get through the multinational requirements, the accessibility requirements, like anything you're actually going to be willing to support through PSS.
Once you get on that train, though, are you going to be able to, will Microsoft be able to take advantage of the monthly or 6 week release cadence that Chromium has? I mean, is that a plug in play kind of a thing, or are they going to,
if they go down slow that it down. Path, right? Like that is a good question. I think this is part of the challenge for them is they got to re-engineer their own delivery pipeline. And if they're working inside the Windows team, those are the folks that are struggling the most with that. You know, we're well familiar with the dev groups that are on those very fast delivery pipelines and have been for a long time, to the point where external devs, and I hear this on the show routinely, it's like, hey, can you slow down? Because you're overwhelming us. We can't keep up.
You know what? But you said earlier that this might lead to Edge being kind of separated from Windows. I actually, the more I think about it, and based on what we just said, That seems inevitable. You know, Windows is on its own, right? I mean, just
from a Microsoft perspective, it's a dev timeline, right? It's a it's a place to build software.
Yeah.
Right.
So it's in there, and that team, those teams, that dev team, they're far more familiar with working with GitHub and continuous delivery pipelines, and like they're kind of comfortable there. So bring the guys across that want to work on it, and feed them into the system that they're these guys are already familiar with, and make contributions on GitHub, and see where you go.
And dev div today is what, on the Azure side of the fence? Is that where they are? Is that
Well, they're their own group, but
but they're under Scott Gu, right?
But that's under Scott. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. But as near as I could tell, everything's under Scott Guthrie now.
Pretty much. It is. Everything that's not Office.
Yeah. You know, what is Office got going for it? It still makes money every day, right?
It does.
Yeah.
Yep.
Right.
I do just sort of, these are big corporations. You look at where they're making money. Their motivations make a lot of sense when you understand where they're making money. I think the battle we've had, the revelation of 2018, was starting to understand where tech giants actually make money, and that's not necessarily good for you. Right. Right. This, you know, if you're not paying for the product, you probably are the product.
As they say.
I mean, compared to Google or Facebook, though.
Yeah.
You're not, I mean, in Microsoft with a browser, you're not, well, I guess you are in a small way, but I mean, Microsoft's primary revenue driver is not based on it taking advantage of your personal data.
Yes.
And suppose that is an advantage. I guess it seems like kind of a vague point. But.
Well, and that's where I think they have an opportunity here to play that up, right? Mm-hmm. To take it, you know. Right. And again, I would hope for goodwill, but, you know, annual reports count for a lot more. So given that that's not how they make money and they're looking for an angle, you know, we talk about the statue of Microsoft has not been chasing markets the way it used to.
If you go back and look at, remember when they announced this, there were two primary posts from Microsoft. One was, I think, the Joe B post that was on the Windows Experience blog. It was superficial and vague. And then there was actually a very detailed post by the Edge HTML, Edge, whatever they're called, Edge HTML team, the internal guys at Edge. And that, it was quite a long post. Joe Belfiore never mentioned Google, not once. The Edge guys did mention Google a couple times. And if you actually look at what they wrote, they basically said, yeah, we've never talked to them on any official level about doing this. And we hope to have that conversation in the days ahead. And yikes, you know,
right.
That is quite a strategic decision to make without checking in with your new partners over there in California.
But well, it's also the nature of open source, you know, right on there when you're at the open source project in GitHub. It's like, hey, take a copy, knock yourself out. Here's what it takes to build Chromium.
Mm-hmm. Right, right. It's I assume someone at Microsoft built it once just to make sure they could do it. And then off they went.
Yeah, it might be a couple of
compiles.
The thing I think they kind of have to hurry up about, though, is Windows 7. The Windows 7 version, right? Because I think part of the reason they're doing this browser for Windows 7 is to help people who are in the midst of trying to get off 7 and going to 10, right? And so the story is, hey, if you could run the same browser everywhere, it would make your transition easier to go to the new operating system, right?
The other thing that ties
if it
into
doesn't
that
come
is
out before next January.
No, but that's actually not an issue, right?
Really?
Everyone has pointed out, yes, because Windows 7 is going out of support in January 2020, except that it's not. There's three more years of support, and Microsoft's customers that want to stay on Windows 7 will now have a modern browser they can go to. That will be one less thing they have to worry about during that upgrade process. Yeah. This will help that upgrade process.
That's
and
a good point.
Who knows? That might be yet another of the major reasons that they went in this direction.
I'll be fascinated to see how many times they extend Windows 7 support too. I mean,
me too.
They may be still paying for XP support. So, But
I think they may extend extended security updates if you want to keep paying, right?
Sure.
Well, they've only talked 3 years from now, but there's mean, obviously, they would like that to be the end of it, and we'll see how it's going in 2023, I guess.
Yeah. Microsoft is perfectly willing to go where the customers are, and if the customers are still there, they'll stay there.
Yeah.
I think that was always the art form, right? It's like they figure out which way the parade is going and run in front.
Nice. And get trampled by the parade. Cool.
Well,
I like your theory, and you're getting us thinking about this because we haven't talked recently about the Chromium Edge stuff, but it's something that's really should be top of mind because this is going to be big.
Out there. You know, there's the whole PWA thing. Yeah. There's the Windows 7 upgrade piece we just talked about. You know, there's
the first issue that Richard raised,
which is what happens when Google says no.
That's going to be really interesting.
It's a valid question.
Yeah.
But these are the teams that have gotten along better about the JavaScript specifications and the HTML5 specifications.
The PWA specifications too. They've worked with Google.
They've influenced each other. Apple along almost kicking and screaming. Right. Like,
yeah, and we're going to find out exactly how that worked in June because I think Apple's going to announce they're doing it too.
Yeah. Well, I think that's an interesting part of it. There is this concern about the monoculture, but there's only going to be one rendering engine.
Yeah.
It's just a question of whether that's necessarily a good thing or bad.
I think that is where you want the monoculture, right? The problem with the web is that anyone can throw up a browser and you show the same page, it looks a little different, you know? Mm-hmm. Or looks really different, or there's a piece missing, or whatever. I mean, you can innovate on top of a rendering engine pretty easily. And Microsoft has whatever features they have. Edge certainly has its fans, and there are people who point to whatever features that they love in Edge, and this is the reason I want to use it. I choose Chrome for other reasons, but whatever. We all have our reasons. that's possible. I mean, Brave is, like I keep mentioning Brave. I mean, Brave is built on Chromium, and it looks a little bit like Chrome, I guess, but it has its own special things.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they all are. The diversity of engine is pretty low right now, but maybe it's just a commodity product now. That's not the important part. That everything else about a browser is more interesting than the rendering engine.
Yeah.
I mean, this isn't as crazy as Windows 8, but there is that part of me, that kind of low-key character that really enjoys the fact that the pot's being stirred here, you know, because let's face it, we go through weeks of really boring nothingness, and then they announce something nutso like this. It's like, nice, let's go. You know, let's see what happens here.
The dynamics of the, you know, big money in open source, I think we're nowhere near fully understanding this. Like at some point, it's already been pretty common when you're hiring developers that you go look at their GitHubs and see what they're working on and what they contribute to and so forth. It says a lot about someone. But I'm wondering if there's going to be an emergence of the superstar class in the development community based on the fact that they are lead contributors and administrators of important projects. I don't know what that looks like yet, but it's certainly, you know, this the dynamics of the open source world has changed substantially because of these tech giants.
You think the GitHub acquisition played any role in this or vice versa? I mean, are these things connected somehow or just
I don't think so.
I general mean, I totally direction.
I think it was going on anyway. To me, the most important part about the GitHub acquisition is not the GitHub part. I'm happy they've done that. I think generally people are saying, good, like it's kind of safe now. It's Electron. Mm-hmm. Like Electron.
Right. Yeah.
Again, if the Windows team can sort of get themselves organized and start studying what works well in Electron, what doesn't, and help people make better Electron apps, because boy, oh boy, you get three or four Slacks running at once, it makes Chrome look lightweight.
Isn't the team's client Electron? Like, there's a bunch of Microsoft stuff that's Electron.
A lot of stuff. That's what I was just wondering. Yeah, so VS Code is Electron, right? Is that what you said?
Yeah. Everything, and it's all got a Chrome browser built in.
But is that I view, again, which is this idea of I don't want to install software directly anymore. I want to be able to build everything in JavaScript and HTML. And then if you need a desktop client, you can pile as a desktop client.
It could be PWA too, right?
Yeah, PWA is a variation on that. It's like these are common themes. But to have the folks inside of Windows who really understand how Windows work, study what Electron is doing and say, how can we make contributions to the Electron project so that it runs better on Windows, which means every Electron app
what you just said is so not what Microsoft was. Before we would investigate Electron to see how we could subvert it.
Yeah.
And, you know, we could do some kind of a Electron X or something that was, you know.
Yeah.
But the Windows team is well known for looking at successful applications on Windows and then going to the thing, let us help you make this run better. It's just that now that it's an open source initiative, it'll touch way more apps. That's weird, but you know, it's something they've always done. You want stuff to run well on Windows.
And they do extend that stuff. I mean, having web apps in the store and PWAs in the store is, you know, a gentler form of embrace and extend, I guess. I mean, we'll make your apps available in more places.
Yeah, it's just I'm interested to see what Windows looks like now that Windows is no longer the center of the company And I think these are all moves of that. Since you're no longer the center of the company, mm-hmm. why do we still do this? And why do we still do that? Mm-hmm. And not to make your head any bigger there, Paul, but I did my analysis for Run As Radio for the 2018 shows. And that show we did mm-hmm. together talking about the changes of Windows and the little departure, my number one show, for better or worse.
Oh, really? That's great.
Yeah, yeah.
I got a lot of compliments on that because there was just a great conversation between you and I, right? And a lot of people were saying, like, mm-hmm. you guys clearly know each other and you know, like each other, and I can't stand you. You know that. But the
I get the guy talking right now.
Never given it up. Like, I don't know that I actually regret bringing that bottle of whiskey to the studio. I did say firmly, and it's recorded, you should not open this right now.
Yeah.
This is a mistake. There will be consequences.
Don't
and
throw
only
me
MJ
in that prior patch either.
Nope, not touching it.
I was like, nope.
One of the consequences, I mean, I'm going to visit Scotland someday because of this. Yeah. Like, this is, it's amazing that hasn't happened yet.
I just got back. I was on a rare whiskey acquisition run, as I am prone to do. So I spent about four days. I was around the space side, picked up a couple of
things. Carry your bags the next time you do that.
Was that a cask strength whiskey you gave him, Richard? Or what was it? The Abermarle?
The Abelauer Abuna is one of the few cask strengths you can buy retail. Most cask strengths are specialty. And that's what makes it so hazardous, is it's 60% alcohol. Yeah. 58 to 62. So you're basically drinking
an
ounce of
that. That's what made Monday night so hazardous. We were in New York with Mary Jo Foley and went to a bar that had this stuff.
Oh, no.
And the rest of it was kind of, in fact, I slept through the taxi ride. You'll be happy to know.
How do you spell that cask strength whiskey?
It's the spelling and the pronunciation have nothing to do with each other. It's Scottish.
That's right.
Well, spell it if you can.
Let me look it up.
Like, you can't.
It's Abelauer. It's like Abelauer Abunda is how I, you know, but it's
but
not.
But I want to Google it.
Apostrophe
right?
in it, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I guess if I Google, Google's pretty good. If you type Abelauer Abunda, I probably will know.
Yeah, you'll get it. You'll get it.
It's about $100. Abunadh.
Oh, of course.
Obviously.
Yep. And then Q7, number sign.
Abelauer Abunda, the whiskey.
There you go.
That's fine whiskey. Oh, it's $95 a bottle.
Not cheap.
It's a reasonable price for a cask strength whiskey.
I can't believe it's cask strength. That's awesome.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's very
I have
unusual.
To hide it when certain friends visit because they'll just drink it with abandon, and that is not happening in my house.
I
might have to abandon the house.
Recklessly, that's fine. It's when you put Coke in it that you're like, you're out. Get out.
God.
Yeah.
You have any Diet Pepsi? I'd like to.
Yeah, we don't. Please leave.
Mix this.
Sorry. Yeah. Here. I got some freshly reconstituted rum for you. You can put that in whatever you want. There are definitely three tiers of whiskey in my cabinet. There's whiskeys designed to introduce people to whiskey. There are whiskey for people who like whiskey and want to taste things. And then there is, okay, will you take whiskey seriously? You'll appreciate this.
What do you suggest for people who you want to introduce to whiskey?
A Dalmore 12 or the Macallan 12
or any of
the simpler Glenmorangies, Quintus Rubin and so forth. They're all space sides. They're very drinkable. They're quite dark color because they tend to be sherry and port casked. And so they're sweeter and more caramelly. They don't taste like you've just licked the inside of an ashtray.
Yeah.
Yum.
No. They're good place. And that's, you know, when I have folks who are like, I really don't like whiskey. It's like, all right, try this. You know, and a Dalmore 12 is pretty much a go-to because you're basically drinking caramel. But I brought that Abelauer at the time because I know you guys liked whiskey. It's like, hey, here's a surprise for you. Try this in the comfort of your own home when you don't have to move around, not when you've got a three-hour show.
I believe there are two things also on that video. One is Leo trying to steal it away from me. Yes. And the other one is when my first time I tasted it, you said, someone asked, you know, how is it? And I said, I think that I was just shot in the tongue.
Well, I remember you sinking back in your chair and going, oh my goodness, this is my jam.
Like, yeah.
All right. Well,
it was a life-altering moment. There's no doubt about it.
That's awesome. Yeah.
I have caused those for a few folks along the way when it comes to picking the right whiskey.
Yeah. No. This has been in my house. Is in my house now. Has been in my house ever since this day.
There's a game we play in Vegas where I sit at the good whiskey bar and you tell me your favorite whiskeys and I pick something you've never had before that you'll like.
Nice. Oh, that's fun.
You know, it's not a great way to use up brain cells, but it's entertaining for a lot of folks.
But it is one way.
Yeah. Whiskey fanatic. Wow.
Well, and then the couple of the better bartenders at those places, they have stuff that's not on the shelf and so forth. So once they see me do that for a half an hour, then they pull out things I've never seen.
That's a
good day for me, right? It's like, hey, something totally. Here's a 1972 bottling of Daluane. I'm like, okay. Yeah.
Sure.
I do. There are a few whiskeys in my life. I call them unicorns because there was only like 300 bottles of them made 25 years ago. And you're only going to get to taste it once and you're never going to see it again. And it's just like a unicorn.
Mm-hmm.
And I got nothing bad to say about bourbons either. Right. Like, I'm not automatically scotch only. I've done the bourbon trail. I've met some extraordinary bourbons along the way. And
do you remember when you and Carl brought me on the .NET Rocks tour and you brought me into the van and we drank bourbon till 4 a.m.? Remember that?
it's like the Willie Nelson of whiskey van, except instead of pot, you had whiskey and scotch.
It was unbelievable.
That's pretty much what it was. Well, the only thing that was in that fridge was whiskeys, right? Anything else. And I think at one point I tweeted out, and then the whole van smelled of Angel's Envy because the Angel's Envy jumped out of the freezer and shattered.
It was sin. Oh, that is not good.
Yeah. Now the days of the road trips I think are done, but we used to rent RVs and cover them in logos like a NASCAR and drive them across the country.
It was fun. It was a silly job. Then everybody would try
and give us pizza because that's what I needed was more pizza.
Right.
And at the end of the show, they're like, hey, you want the leftover pizza for the road? It's like, as opposed to the new pizza I'll get tomorrow. they were experiences. But, you know, we don't ship product like that anymore. That was back when there was Big Bang releases of Visual Studio, every 2 or 3 years. And you'd go out and talk about it for a while. Yep. Now it's every quarter. I can only spend so much time in an RV.
Especially when you have a nice house like yours. So,
Well, I've acquired the Coast Place. I think I was showing. It was the wife's idea. I did not want a getaway vic cabin. Sometimes you're outnumbered 1-to-1.
You're Canadian and you don't have a cabin. I don't know how you live.
I got a cabin by the sea now. And I actually did a picture of a bottle of Abuna in front of the sunset and sent it to Paul.
Well, you have to christen it properly.
Yeah. There's always a couple of bottles of whiskeys in there all the time. The big collection's still down in the city.
I've ordered my bottle, and it's on.
There you go. You're equipped. to have you back in the group. Get your own bottle,
Leo. You're not having mine.
K&L has it for $69. So,
Mark's.
I've never seen it that low.
That's batch 62. I hope that was a good batch. I don't know.
I've been, if you care to spend money on whiskey, I've been enjoying Balvenie's Tun 1509, which I generally have to go to Scotland to acquire that. They're on batch 4.
Ah. Oh, jeez.
So is that because it's a slightly limited run?
Yeah, it's about a couple of thousand bottles per edition. Yeah. They're fairly hard to come by.
Oh, I see a batch 5 for $400 here.
There you go. New ones out.
Yeah, the new Balvenie's here. The new Balvenie's here.
There you go. Yeah.
I love the label.
That is very nice.
That's a good label. If you have to ask, laddie.
How much is it? You can't afford it.
You can't afford it. Oh, I can't wait to put my kilt on for that.
Awesome.
Awesome.
I'm sure the Olock place here would love to see you in a kilt, Leo. So we're going to go down that path.
I have manly calves.
Yeah. It wouldn't take too much scotch to make that happen.
No, it could be made to happen. Richard Campbell, you are always fun to have on the show.
He is.
.NET Rocks and Run As Radio are the two podcasts. Where could we find those?
Exactly like they sound. dotnetrocks and runas. RADIO. I'm reading it off the screen.
It's key though that the run as is one word.
Well, that's why it makes it an administrator's joke.
Right.
If you go to the run as site, you'll find out the whole website's full of administrator jokes. Like the underscores are all alt keys that work. And you know, if you're an IT guy, you'll get my website. Otherwise, it makes no sense.
And if you're a rocker and a roller, you'll get it as well. If you go to .NET Rocks. You guys, what do you said, let's go out and shoot a bunch of album covers. Is that what
basically? Yeah, that's what happened at that particular one. But what I like is people complain that I look too mean and Carl looks too silly. That was the lifestyle. Not too worried about that.
That's the day. Those are the. I wanted. You know, you inspired me with that RV thing, and we never did do that. I always wanted to do that.
Well, we always wanted to get you out of the studio sometime, Leo. It's fun to get in front of live audiences.
Oh, I love it.
And we definitely matured a way of making episodes in front of an audience that is different.
We are going to Seattle in May, Leo.
There you go. That's interesting.
Yeah.
All right. Maybe because we've been thinking about
it. Okay. Let me make it a little less interesting. I'll just warn you. It is at the same time as Google I.O. Right. I know.
Again.
But just full disclosure.
No, I would like to go up in May, actually. We've been meaning to go to Seattle.
I'll be there.
The snow should be melted by then, right?
Snow will probably be melted next week, right? Generally, what happens is the wind changes direction. It rains continuously, and then that's done.
Mr. Richard Campbell, thank you, sir.
My pleasure. Thank you. Great to see you guys.
All right.
Thank you.
Take care. We'll take a little break. The back of the book coming up next on the show. But first, a word from our sponsor, and it's an appropriate sponsor for our IT-focused folk, a name you know, Atlassian. Atlassian for IT, a collaboration software company that powers IT teams around the world. Staying competitive in an increasingly cloud-based world requires IT teams to plan and execute faster than ever. Maybe, if you will, if I could coin a phrase, agilely. And because today's applications are more complex than ever, incidents often require open, agile, and smart coordination between operations and software development teams. Atlassian is synonymous with agile, of course, with their Jira. But it doesn't stop with Jira. Oh, man. It goes much, much deeper. In fact, we use Jira to keep track of projects, who's working on what stage they're at. That's a really great way to do that. But that all integrates into Confluence, which we, frankly, for me, is even more important because we need to document our what we're doing and our workflow and how things work. And Confluence is the best way to do it. And because it flows so easily for our team, it's never, it's never an issue of, oh, I forgot to document it, or it's just a natural part of the process. Atlassian has software tools designed to manage this kind of complex situation, complex collaboration. And by the way, I think a lot of people, they hear Agile, they think, oh, it's just for developers, or maybe about Bitbucket, their code database and all that. No, Atlassian offers a reliable, affordable, underscore that, suite of tools for teams of all kinds and of all sizes, from DevOps to Agile, IT apps to Ops to ITSM, whatever's next, whatever's on your horizon, Atlassian provides the technology backbone to help modern IT organizations plan, service, and support the kind of change that makes business happen, makes it fly. So we got Jira, we've got Confluence, we've got Bitbucket. That's kind of the backbone of effective cross-team project planning, organization, and communication. But there's also OpsGenie and StatusPage, which help you detect incidents better, coordinate your response efforts, resolve issues faster, and, of course, keep your customers and stakeholders up to date. And again, it's something the folks who are doing the work, who have got the hands-on, who are in there on the front lines, sometimes, you know, that little bit gets left behind. But that's what Atlassian makes easy for you. Choose the tool that's right for your current framework, but you'll know that it's going to grow with you. And it all integrates seamlessly with Jira and Confluence, and that keeps you from bouncing from platform to platform. It is an all-in-one solution. Your team is going to love. And as with everything Atlassian does, the tools for your IT team are easy to use and free to try. Atlassian. Go to Atlassian.com/IT to find out which Atlassian offering is right for your team. Try Atlassian today to see what IT can be at Atlassian.com/IT. Well, we got rid of Richard.
Yeah, I love Richard. Seriously, isn't he just the best?
He is great.
Yeah.
He is great.
I love that guy.
Although there is something about IT ops guys, enterprise guys, they're cocky. Do you notice that?
No, you know what it is?
What?
They're always right.
Maybe that's why you're cocky. Yeah, Greg Farrell's like
doctors,
that too.
Doctors, Leo. Yeah. No, you listen to him, you're like, yeah, whatever he just said is right.
Yeah, he knows. Yeah. Yeah. They say everything with such assurance. I think that might also be battlefield training, right?
I think so.
If you go out there and you tell the boss, well, I don't know.
I'm not sure.
I think we can fix that. Or,
how many times did I say, I don't know on this show? And he just gets in there and he's like, this is what's going
never
on.
Never say I don't know. I know.
Yeah.
Yeah. I like that.
Yep.
I like that confidence.
Yeah, it's amazing.
Let's kick things off the back of the book with Paul Thurrott and your tip of the week.
Yeah, I have two tips. The first one is for Google Chrome. I don't know what took them so long, but last week Google finally released their own themes for Chrome, the web browser. This maybe someday will impact us on the Edge side. But if you go to the Chrome Web Store and click on themes on the left, you'll see the published by Chrome stuff right at the top. There are 14 of them. They're basic color schemes. Google is working to implement dark mode support in a future build of Chrome for Windows 10. I guess and the Mac, I should say, as well. But these are just color schemes, you know, that you manually apply. But I think they're nice. If you find the, you know, the default view a little too high, you know, too black and white, or I guess blue and white, this will let you color them however you want.
I feel like they've had this for a while. That's not the case.
No, these are new. I know, it's so crazy. Weird. It's yeah. I know.
They've had theming. You could theme.
Yeah, there have been themes, right? Yeah. And then, you know, I'm sure third parties have made some themes that are sort of like these or whatever.
Right.
I think you could always get the classic, you know, the original Chrome Blue was one of the things you could get. But these are Google made, you know, professional for the new UI. They're nice.
Cool.
The other one is also a Google tip, oddly enough. But for the Google Fi users out there, you probably know you can order Fi SIMs from Google directly for free. They'll ship one to your house. Of course, you have to wait for it. And so if you need a new SIM, you can now buy one if you're in the United States, which you would be if you're a Google Fi subscriber. You can now buy them at Best Buy for $10, and then you get a $10 service credit. So it's effectively free. These are the standard SIMs you're buying or getting. You can't buy a data-only SIM. One of the really nice things about Google Fi is that you can get any number of data SIMs and put them in your devices and just use the data off the same account. You still have
even
to get
an iPad. I use one on an iPad. Yep. Laptops. If you have that HP Envy X2, you can use it there.
That's the best. It's
cool that it works. I love
Google Fi. Yeah,
me too.
So just good to know. If you need, you know, if something happens to your SIM card, you need one right away. If it is a local Best Buy, you'll be able to get one immediately through there.
And then, in this app of the week.
Yeah. So I want to say it was last September, Google announced that they were going to get rid of Inbox, which is the way that I do my email now. And I looked at Gmail first, of course, because I'm thinking, well, maybe they'll bring some Inbox features over to Gmail and maybe this will work out. Gmail has turned into this horrible, horrible application. It's convoluted, complicated, and it's got too many widgets. And I'm just so used to this really stripped down kind of minimalistic email app. That I decided at this point, I have until the end of March to decide. That's when Inbox is officially going away. I'm going to do something new for email. Now, tied to that is this notion that I've been consolidating my various email accounts centrally to my Google account, my Thurrott.com account, and using Inbox as the front end. And what that means is that I have these other accounts, a standard Gmail account, an Outlook.com account, where I was forwarding the mail from those accounts to Gmail, to my Thurrott.com account. And then I've configured that account to be able to reply to or send new emails from those accounts as well. It's kind of a standard thing you can do. And this change has kind of made me look at email again with fresh eyes, and maybe this isn't the best way to do things, et cetera, et cetera. So the short version is what I discovered in disconnecting those accounts is that I was losing emails. And there are theories about why that might be. Spam filters might be part of it. It's kind of hard to say why, but what I decided that was that whatever I did with email, I was never going to forward or collect email from different accounts in one place. I was going to keep them separately on the web or, you know, the web service. So I'll keep them separate. And then I would use some kind of an application to do the consolidation there. In other words, I'll collect the email from all the accounts, preferably see them in a single view, you know, single inbox view on both mobile and the desktop. Pretty early on, I would say by the end of last year, I decided that I would go with the Outlook mobile client for mobile. It's a Microsoft app, obviously. They don't offer this on the desktop, right? So there's a Windows Mail client that's built into Windows 10, which is a cartoon app. It's terrible. It's nothing like Outlook Mobile. I wish they made Outlook Mobile on Windows, but they don't. And I've had a hard time finding a good application, like an actual native application. Then a reader recommended this thing called Postbox. And Postbox is really interesting. It's $40. It's a one-time purchase. You can use it across multiple platforms. I believe it's, I think, I'm just saying this now, I'm not even sure. I'm not using it on the Mac. I believe it's on Mac and Windows, but if it isn't, it's...
I've used it on the Mac.
It's, okay, I've not tried it on the Mac yet, but it's, you know, multiple Windows PCs, which is crucial for me because I do a lot of reviewing and so forth, different laptops and everything. It does exactly what I'm asking for. Multiple accounts, single view. It's got a nice and really customizable UI. You know, it's a three-pane view by default. I use a two-pane view, whatever. But you can make this look or work exactly how you want. It is astonishingly good. And I've been testing it at least a month now. And this is absolutely, this is definitely what I'm gonna go with. It's just an excellent, excellent email application. So I will write about this formally sometime in the next week. I've been meaning to do that, but every so often someone will ask, hey, what's going on with this thing? I know you said you were switching, you know, whatever. I'm going to be using Postbox. And by the way, you can try it for free for 30 days. I strongly, strongly recommend spending a lot of time looking at how you can customize it. Because it can do anything. I mean, you can look and, like I said, and work however you want it to. If you want to keep all your emails separate in different folder structures, you can do that. If you want a single view like I do, you can do that. Supports dark mode, light mode. You can change the toolbars. You can change the way it looks. You can it's fantastic. The keyboard shortcuts are logical. It's a fantastic application. And I haven't been able to say that about an email application since like Eudora. I mean, it's been forever on the client.
I think Gibson still uses Eudora.
Yeah, I looked at Thunderbird. I looked at all kinds of stupid. I mean,
there are lots of good choices on Macs.
On the yes, there are. Yeah,
and there are dearth of decent choices. You know, it's like Pegasus.
That is exactly right.
I've been using Claws on Windows, but
I use something on the Mac called Boxy Suite, and what that is a front end to the Google stuff, but it's highly customizable. So I used the Boxy client for Inbox before. It looks just like Inbox, which is all I want.
Right.
The Boxy client for Gmail, which is part of Boxy Suite, they also have Calendar, is, you know, it looks like Gmail by default, which is what I don't want, but they customize it. And so you can actually make that look really simple. I will be switching to Postbox because, you know, I want the same thing everywhere. But I had been using, and for months, I had been using the Boxy stuff. And that stuff's great on the Mac. There are a few things like this in Windows, but you're right. It's amazing how many more of those types of things are on the Mac than there are on Windows.
Yeah,
I can't quite explain it.
I've really been challenged to find a nice client for Windows.
Yeah.
So I'm going to try this.
So look at this thing. It's beautiful. And if you like it, because it does work on Windows and Mac, you can have the same thing everywhere. And that there's some advantage to that. You don't have to think, as you switch between computers.
Absolutely. Good pick. Thank you. Postbox-inc.com
is the website. That's right. Yep.
Now for Mary Jo Foley's enterprise pick of the week.
If you're a larger enterprise with software assurance, you've had the opportunity for years to do something called the Office Home Use Program. What that is it's a way for you to offer your employees copies of Office to use at home for a really cheap cost. Oh. It's like $15 per copy. But, guys, I have some bad news.
Oh.
Microsoft's about to make some changes to Home Use Program. Instead of having you buy Office at a deep discount, they're going to have you have the opportunity to get Office 365 Home or Personal for 30% off for your employees, which isn't the same thing.
No.
I don't know if they're going to totally drop Office standalone non-subscription clients from Home Use Program. I've heard they're telling some customers this. So your only option actually might be the Office 365 Home and Personal at a discount going forward. If that's the case, I know there are going to be a lot of very angry enterprises out there because Many of them just want the one-time pay a flat fee. I don't want the subscription thing. But, you know, given that Twins campaign they're doing and all, they're really trying to dissuade people from using perpetual office, and they want you to do the subscription. So it's not that surprising if they end up doing this. Anyway,
can I ask you a question about this?
Yeah.
So I don't know why this is in the back of my head, but I thought they had gotten rid of the home use program at one point.
No. Oh, I don't know if they ever did, but they're still currently offering it now.
And the way but it's only been for a perpetual office, right? Never for 365, and that's the change. It's giving now it's a discount for
365. Oh, almost right. So they have had the perpetual client as part of home use, but fairly recently they added Office 365 Pro Plus as another option, which is basically subscription Office, right?
Yeah. I'm sorry. I'm just confused.
It was Office 365 Pro Plus or the perpetual client.
I thought it was kind of liberal in the past. Like the idea was like if work paid for it for you, you could kind of, your whole family could have it or something like that. Was that not the case? Or was it just one license? Or
I think it was two licenses perhaps, but not your whole family. Okay. It was somewhat limited. And also, by the way, as Wes Miller will tell you from Directions on Microsoft, you're not supposed to use home stuff for work. Right, like by the license agreement. So sure. It's kind of ironic that they would sell you these copies to use at home when you are only licensed to use them for home and personal use and not for work.
I'm openly flouting the rules and doing work. Yeah, you are.
And therein lies the problem. It's Paul Thurrott.
It's people like you.
It's people like you. Wreck it for everyone.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well,
Anyway, all I'm going to say is, like, these changes seem a little bit fluid. I don't know if they're set in stone right now, but they're going to be happening soon. The U.S. program isn't yet active. This change hasn't happened in the U.S. yet. It has happened in some other countries. So let's see what happens with the home use program.
I bet it's tied to Office 2019 and the fact that the licensing for that has become very limited.
It has, right?
There are no on-prem versions of Office now with multiple user support. Like, you basically just buy one. It's one person, one PC, one license.
Yep. They're trying to wean people off that thing. They're keeping it alive so that they can say for people who need it, it's there. But they're trying to get people off that thing.
Okay.
Well, yep. So that's your enterprise pick.
Or non-pick.
Yeah. Or like caution. Enterprise caution.
Yeah. Caution of the week. And now code name. We haven't had a code name in a while.
I know, we haven't. The code name today is Shimla. Shimla, as the walking cat discovered today on Twitter, is the code name for a product that hasn't yet been announced. It's called Microsoft. I want to make sure I say it right. Microsoft Forms Pro. So if you know what Microsoft Forms is, it's a tool that they have right now for education users and Office 365 commercial users that lets you really easily create a quiz or a survey or a poll. Now they're going to make this thing called the pro version of this, which isn't exactly the same as a survey or a quiz or anything like that. It's more going to be a tool for businesses to capture feedback from their customers. So it's like a real-time feedback kind of mechanism, so that you can see what your customers think of your product at every stage as you roll it out, create it, develop it. I don't know if it's going to cost money. People are asking me, is it going to be free just like Forms is? Or is this like a freemium thing where Forms for consumers and education will be free, but then they'll be charging for businesses? I don't know. It doesn't say anywhere that I've seen. But remember, we've talked about the Power Platform. Power BI, Power Apps, and Flow, that's come up a few times on the show. Well, the Power Platform somehow fits into this new version. So see, Power Platform, it's a key to everything. This is why we need a Power Platform onesie, as I've suggested several times on the show. Anyway, I think they're going to announce this later this week. It sounds like they accidentally tipped people off to it on the Office 365 roadmap. So thanks, Walking Cat, and thanks, Taro Elhonen, for helping figure this out. We don't know yet if it's free, and I'm not exactly sure how it relates to the other product that is called Forms, if it uses the same underlying engine or what the similarities will be, but it's coming soon.
Excellent. And
We had a lot of scotch early, but I...
We did.
But I feel that we still need... It's kind of like a Boilermaker, a beer to go with our scotch.
I think we do. I don't know how this would go with a scotch, but, you know, tomorrow is Valentine's Day or Galentine's Day, if you like to celebrate it that way.
Did you just say Galentine's
Day? What does that mean?
Guys, Galentine's Day, it means you celebrate Valentine's Day with your gal pals.
Oh.
Oh.
It's a thing.
I don't think my wife would like that.
Maybe not for you.
I'm listening.
Go on.
It's an even more expensive form of Valentine's Day.
Go on.
So, you know, I thought maybe a chocolate-themed beer because Valentine's Day is often about chocolates. There happens to be a great beer from Perennial in St. Louis, Missouri. It's called Perennial Abraxas. It is a stout that has chocolate, cinnamon, and just all those good stout flavors that you like. Chocolate, not bourbon, but just like all the rich combined goodness in an imperial stout. Plus chilies from keeping it to be too sweet, but not so many that, you know, you feel like your mouth's on fire, but a nice blend. It's called Abraxas. You can usually find it in bottles, not often on draft, but sometimes. And it's definitely worth seeking out. Sometimes runs 10 to 12% based on the year. So, you know, you might just want to have one. Unless you're Paul, you might want to have several. Just saying.
It's not worth drinking unless it's in the double digits. That's all I'm
exactly.
saying.
Yeah. So it's called Abraxas, A-B-R-A-X-U-S.
Very nice. And that wraps things up for another Windows Wednesday.
Windows Weekly Wednesday.
Wednesday is Windows Weekly Day.
www.www.
We do this show Wednesdays, as you might have guessed. 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern time. That would be about 1900 UTC if you want to stop by and watch us live at twit.tv/live or listen live. We have audio and video live streams of all of our stuff. You can actually even ask your Amazon Echo or your Google Home. You could just say, okay, Echo, listen to Twit Live, and you'll hear whatever's going on at the moment. You can also say, listen to Windows Weekly. It'll play the most recent podcast. I like doing that. That's my new morning ritual. When I get up, I will tell my Echo to start playing podcasts. I really like that. Because, you know, you, while you're shaving and everything, you just can catch up on the world. So maybe you should add us to that. We also have a flash briefing for every day of the week from the Twit Network. So if you listen to Echo's flash briefing in the morning, add that. Add Twit to your flash briefing. You'll hear little bits of this show and all of our other shows. You can also download on-demand copies at twit.tv/ww or go into your favorite podcast application and subscribe. That way you get it each and every week. You'll find Paul Thurrott at his website, thurrott.com. Every minute of every day, he's scribble, scribble, scribble. Lots of stuff. thurrodoublegood.com. And then that's your slogan. I'm sorry, you're stuck with it. And then his books are published at leanpub.com. You'll find the field guide to Windows 10 and other books there. Mary Jo Foley writes for ZDNet. Her blog is easy to find, allaboutmicrosoft.com. And she writes just as much as Paul does. Between the two of them, man, if you just follow those two. How dare you? You will easily keep up on what's going on in the world of Redmond. You're going up for, what is it, Ignite? What are you doing in May?
Build.
I want to go to Build. I do want to go to Build.
You should.
What
you
date like is that going to be?
6 through 8, I think.
Okay.
Right. Monday through Wednesday, 6 through 8.
I think we could do that. I would like to do that. And then wrap it up with a special version of Windows Weekly. We've been wanting to go up to Seattle and spend some time up there. Spring in Seattle would be nice.
Mm-hmm.
You used to live there, right, Mary Jo?
I did.
Is that the best time of year?
Best time is August, but spring is usually pretty okay.
Okay. August is the time when the sun shines.
It is. Like, it almost never rains.
It's always sunny when I go there.
You're just lying.
This is the biggest lie.
It's to keep us Californians out is what they're doing.
It rains a lot. No.
You've just been lucky.
Remember when they had Build on campus and it rained so hard that the tents leaked? Yeah,
that's
remember
true.
That?
That was terrible.
Yeah.
Those are just bad tents. I mean, that was just dumb.
Leaky tents.
If only we had invented a shelter that was impervious to rain.
We could have had the show festival there. Has some left over. I'm just saying.
Yeah.
And then we should mention that in a, it's is it a week?
Okay, so I got some news for you on this front. They seem to be changing the time of this thing. So I'm going to have to get back to you now and see what the deal is. So don't announce it again until we know more.
Okay, so what we're talking about is Microsoft's presumably HoloLens announcement at Mobile World Congress. And we'll stream it live.
It's about, 10 days away, 11 days?
Yeah, it's February 24th on a Sunday.
Okay. So we'll let you know.
As soon as I know, I will let you know.
Samsung's event is a week from today. So for that reason, we are moving Windows Weekly a couple hours earlier next week. So
that's next week, right?
Yeah, this is the 13th. We're already there.
Oh, wow.
It's just flying.
I know.
Yeah,
so we'll be starting Windows Weekly 9 a.m. Pacific, noon Eastern. That is 1700 UTC on the 20th.
I usually eat lunch and watch TV at noon. Is that going to be a problem?
Yeah, that's okay. It's your executive time. I understand.
So it's going
like
to be
break
noon.
My schedule.
Noon our time.
Noon Eastern.
Okay.
Right. And we'll have to wrap it up by 2 p.m. because that's when Samsung takes the stage and talks about their Galaxy S10.
Right. Cool.
So we're just flipping it so that we can live broadcast the Galaxy.
I'm going to want to see that anyway. That's good.
Yes.
Yeah. Perfect.
You know, if you want, we can just keep you on and keep watching.
Just talk about it.
Yeah, we'd be glad to keep
I don't think we're going to learn anything new during the announcement, honestly. It seems like the whole thing is leaked.
Samsung's new strategy clearly is leak it all before the event.
Mm-hmm. And then just show up and say, it's all real.
Yeah, you knew. It's amazing. It happened three times in a row.
It's weird.
Yeah, it's bizarre.
Anyway, so that's next week, and then we'll be back to our regular time on the 27th, and maybe we'll have something to say about HoloLens.
Yeah, let's hope.
Yeah. Thanks, Paul. Thanks, Mary Jo. Have a great day. Stay warm, and we'll see you next week early on Windows Weekly. Bye-bye.